Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. On today's Pardon My Take, we've got a twofer for the people. Coach Buzz Williams back on the show. Haven't talked to him in a while. He's here for the NIT, the Texas A&M Aggies, competing in the semifinal on Tuesday night. So when you listen to this, hopefully he's a winner. And then we have Trent Brown, offensive lineman from the New England Patriots. Very large human. One of the largest humans we have ever had on the show.
Just on Earth, really.
On Earth, off his new contract. Talk to him in studio as well. We are going to talk a little Tiger, overtime rules change, hot seat, cool throne, guys on chicks. Hey guys, it's Big Cat and Fight Week is here. Rough and Rowdy 24 invades Clarksburg, West Virginia this Friday night, April 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern. For the first time since Rough and Rowdy won, every single fight will be a brand new brawler, and we found the wildest hillbillies the holler has to offer. Order now to enjoy 20 amateur matchups with no headgear, plus our live ring girl contest after the final bell. These country roads are being paved with blood and grit and balls. Join me and Dave on the call for Rough and Rowdy 24 tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Witness all the chaos with pay-per-view replay available all weekend long on buyrnr.com. That's buyrnr.com.
It's Pardon My Take, presented by Barstool Sports.
Welcome to Pardon My Take, presented by Venmo. We're giving away money. Venmo's giving away money to AWL's all month long. Use hashtag PMT. When you make a transaction on Venmo, you can win up to $500 for free. Today is Wednesday, March 30th. And Tiger Woods is back.
Well,
we think.
His plane is going to Augusta, allegedly. I've been scouring the message boards. I've been looking at FlightAware, Flight Tracker, all the above, checking out the tail numbers. It appears that Tiger Woods is going to Augusta. Now, there's no other reason why he would be there unless he was actually playing in the event, right?
Well, I talked to my sources in the golf world, a.k.a. Frankie Borelli, and he said that there's a 95% chance he's going to be playing in the Masters.
If I was Tiger, even if I wasn't playing, I'd just fly down there for the free meal.
Yeah.
Go to the Champions Dinner, peace out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Tiger is such like a legend in Augusta that he could show up. They could create just like a almost like a pace car group for Tiger where he just gets out there and he plays 18, not even officially in the tournament, give him a cart. Send him out. Just let him open up the tournament.
People are saying that he's actually looking good, though. It's whether he will have the endurance to last 4 days in Augusta. But he played in that tournament with his son. He looked good there. The word on the street, again, this is sources Frankie Borelli, said that he's striking the ball very well. He's actually better today than he was even in 2019 when he won the Masters last and was coming off injuries. So there you go.
So Tiger has improved his swing like what 9-10 times over the course of his career.
Keep reinventing yourself.
Keep reinventing himself. Sometimes like having a drastic life change, a life altering change, like maybe he's learned to not like rotate his right ankle as
right.
much in his swing. Maybe he's actually improved. He's come out of this stronger.
All I ask is that if Tiger competes, and let's just say like storybooks, you know, ending, he wins the Masters again this year. Do you think the police officers who refused to take a blood test after he crashed his car will also be there?
I don't know what you're talking about, Big Cat.
That would be a great, like,
I don't
we
know,
gave him the
I
hug
don't know what you're
after,
talking about.
Where they're like, I was reading up, because I, like, forgot all about it. And I'm happy Tiger's back. It's great TV. I want him to be back and playing golf. But I read the article again today, and it was like, the police officers said they had collected all the data and they won't be releasing anything unless Tiger Woods and his lawyers agree to it.
That's HIPAA.
Like, huh?
That's how the judicial system works. If you're a celebrity and you drive a car, unless it's because your dogs are trying to bite you while you're driving you're entitled to due process, which means that if you're rich enough, they won't release the report.
Yes. So it would be nice, though, if that officer who I'm sure is a big Tiger fan.
Well, I also think that if you're in like a single car accident and you almost die, almost lose your feet, at some point it's like, okay, how much more can we punish this guy than him not being able to walk for 9 months?
Counterpoint, if you're driving under the influence and you've also already have a DUI, maybe it's a good idea to be like, hey, you shouldn't do this anymore.
That's HIPAA.
That's HIPAA.
Holding celebrities accountable is HIPAA.
Either way, Tiger, it's good that he's back.
I'm glad that he's back. I mean, just his presence makes the tournament more exciting. I'd like to see him in the par three tournament with his son.
I'd like to see him in everything. If you told me Tiger was competing for if he was fifth place on Sunday, it would be the most incredible story, and it would be great, and everyone would be tuned in. Tiger makes golf more fun. Tiger's presence makes golf more fun. I don't know anyone who's I obviously bust Tiger's balls on certain things, but like who out there isn't like actually rooting for Tiger because he's so important to golf?
No, he moves the needle.
Right. And he's also been like, he's the perfect story of, he was the perfect choir boy guy who then fell down and had to rebuild himself. Like, America loves that.
Yeah, that was an all-time moment when he got up on stage and announced that he had to go seek treatment
with his mom in attendance
for having too much sex.
Yeah, he had a sex addiction press conference.
Listen, if anybody's getting bonked, it should be Tiger Woods.
Yes,
Back in the day, if we had that technology where we could just bonk a guy instead of sending him to a 12-step program, tell him just jerk off more.
That should have been though the only punishment he had was he had to stand up in front of the country and his mom sitting front row and being like, yeah, I have too much sex. And like that right there is the embarrassment. Like, okay, you're good.
Yeah.
Like that actually is the therapy, because do you stop having sex so you don't have to do another one of these press conferences in front of your mother?
Right. That adding his mom to the mix was the difference, because when he would be like, I have too much sex, his dad would be like, high five. Also, yeah, you need to work at your form because it's seriously lacking.
Yeah.
But when you have to say that to mom, it becomes real.
Yes, really real. So Tiger might be back. Masters coming up. We're going to have Max Homa on next week. Very excited. Max is going to make the cut. I was upset about that because there's a lot of press going around about Tiger possibly playing in these Masters. Not enough press going around that Max Homa guaranteed he'd make the cut.
He's going to make the cut, absolutely.
He's going to make the cut.
1,000,000%. And
there's no pressure.
I mean this in the nicest way possible. I'm saying this because I think that Max has a chance, however remote. It's not unthinkable to think that he could win the Masters.
Oh, I'm going
to
bet on him.
Now, I'm going to bet on him too, absolutely.
100-1.
But here's the question. And again, I'm saying this from a place of love, Max. Would Max Homa be the worst golfer of all time to win the Masters?
No, Mike Weir.
You think so?
I'm pretty sure Mike Weir didn't win anything after.
But what about before?
I don't think Mike Weir has a fucking... Does Mike Weir have a PlayStation 5 tour open?
Fortnite open?
Isn't Mike Weir like the guitar player for Grateful Dead?
No, you're thinking of Bob Weir.
Bob Weir, yes.
Mike Weir, let's see. Mike Weir won...
That'd be crazy if he won.
He won 8 times on the PGA Tour, and he won the Masters in 2003. He did not win any other... Okay, majors.
But he won 8 times on tour.
Right, but so, I mean, Max is already...
He's probably got 3.
Well, he's got the PlayStation open. He's got the Fortnite open.
Mm-hmm.
He's got... what else?
Fisher-Price.
He's got 5. He's got 5 professional wins. 3 on the PGA Tour.
Okay, so...
Max has a long career ahead of him.
He does.
So I don't think you could say that about Max.
At the moment, he could be. We'll see. You know what? That's champagne problems to have.
Yeah. Just go out and win it for us, Max. I'm trying to look up Mike Weir. I saw, because there was an Instagram, I don't know why this is serendipity, but there was a, I saw an Instagram video of Mike Weir practicing his swing while I think his wife was in the grocery store outside of his car.
I like that.
And I'm like, here we go. Because Mike Weir, I mean, why wouldn't you show up to the Masters every year?
That's relatable.
You have to show up to the Masters.
Absolutely.
Every
single year. That's the best part about winning the Masters is you get the jacket. Jim Nance should give Coach K a green jacket if he wins.
That would be nice. I'm looking it up right now. Mike Weir actually had some pretty good finishes. So I'm going to just Google, worst Masters champion ever. I'm sure it's some dude from 100 years ago. 25 worst. Find that for me, Jake. What's the worst golfer to ever win a Masters?
It's like some guy named Lefty that played with a wooden stick.
Yeah, find me someone who just sucked and he just had one great year and that was it. I'll text someone and I'll get an answer for us. All right,
actually ask Max, be like, would you be the worst?
Yeah, would you be the worst?
I'll just ask him that when we interview him.
Yeah, would you be the worst? All right, so what else we got overtime rules changes.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you, Big Cat. Can we call this the Matt Ryan rule? just out of respect for him, because he didn't get the ball in that overtime in the 28-3 game.
Oh, I think it's more of this.
It's definitely more of the Josh Allen rule.
Yeah.
But I feel like, you know, let's give a little bit of respect to old Matty Ice.
Well, so that the rule, here's the only the thing I don't understand about this rule. So it now is both teams in the playoffs, so in playoffs only, have a chance to possess the ball. So if you go down and score a touchdown, the other team gets to get the ball back. They go down and score a touchdown. Then they just kick off, or they can go for two and win the game. What happens when you go to overtime in the playoffs? Let's say it's the Chiefs-Bills. The Chiefs go down and score a touchdown. The Bills go down and score a touchdown. Then they kick off. Then the Chiefs go down and score a touchdown. They win the game. And everyone's like, well, it's unfair because the Bills don't get to rebut.
So the Bills score the first touchdown.
Chiefs score the first touchdown.
Oh, so then
Bills
that's
score
the
first touchdown.
No, at that point, that's where we push off the. Well, you have to play defense in this league too,
right? Which is exactly where we're at
exactly.
Right now.
We're pushing it back two possessions.
I like the rule change because I do think that more teams will. If a team scores a touchdown on the opening drive and then the opponent gets the ball and scores, they most likely would go for two to try to end the game, but. It's just funny to me because it actually has the chance of just having two extra possessions and then right back to the initial problem of, wait, the other team doesn't get to respond to this.
Well, it's because like it's kind of like the kicking game where they're kind of minimizing the importance of kickoffs and being able to kick for touchbacks. But the kicking game is still – it has some importance. They're doing that with the coin.
Right.
So they're saying, okay, the coin should not determine the winner of the game. But it should be a small part of the outcome.
Right,
of the
it
game.
Still helps.
Yeah,
the coin still has a very big part of. Because I don't know,
we're respecting the coin.
Would you would kick off with the coin now?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you would definitely kick off because then if you stop them, you just have to kick a field goal.
Yep,
you kick off. And if they score a touchdown, you have the chance of scoring a touchdown and going for two.
But wait, we should also remind the players that you should elect to kick off. You don't elect to defer.
Correct. But yeah, that's really all that changed here. It's just the teams now, if you win the coin flip, you're going to want to kick off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
I had a wild idea about it.
Okay.
How about
whoever
receives the kickoff? So you flip the coin, they can either opt to receive the kickoff or get 1 point and then kick off. So then if you don't score, the other team wins.
You get a point for doing nothing.
Exactly.
Wait.
For, you get a point for basically kicking off.
What? So it's... Wait. What?
So, for example,
so you're just saying if you get a stop, you win?
Exactly. Because then defense.
Then you would always kick off. Yeah.
Yeah. What?
And you get a point.
And what if the other team scored? So it'd be like, so if it goes to overtime and it's 17-17, right?
Uh-huh.
Now it's 18-17. The other team scores and it's 24-17 or 24-18.
Yep.
And then you score a touchdown and you win with the extra point?
Yep.
I don't know.
How about this? The team that receives the ball, now that they're at a 1 point deficit, if they punt, they also get a point. So now it's a tie game again.
I think that's where it would work out. But then it would give
no, but
defense.
Then why
no,
wouldn't
no,
they
I
just
no, I intentionally would, threw out the dumbest.
Yeah, that would
augmentation
just punt right away
change.
For that point back.
Or maybe you opt out of your extra point and you get it when you kick off. At the
I do like the
defense.
Concept. I like where your head's at, Billy. I like the concept of awarding points to teams in sports for doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah, for just existing.
Yeah,
but
I like
the SAT.
It would give the defense
your name right.
some value.
Yeah, but I mean,
yep.
At the end of the day, I'm happy they changed it because now we don't have people complaining that, oh, they don't, you know, Josh Allen's sitting on the sideline, but I'm just pointing out the fact that we'll just find a new complaint.
Because
if it keeps going, there will be a new complaint, and it will be exactly like the new complaint will have the answer that the old complaint had is just play defense.
Yep.
Just be good at defense.
Exactly.
What could have solved all of this.
Can I?
Defense is half the game.
Here's my advice to Roger Goodell and to the owners. You just put the word super in front of everything and it becomes cooler. So be like, this is the new super overtime rule format. And then you can add in whatever dicked up change you want to make. And everybody's like, this seems important because it's super overtime.
Yes. Yes. So yeah, that's kind of everything that's going on. Well, Hank, you mushed your own bet. You finally decided what to do, right?
Do you want to get the hot seat, cool throne?
Well, do we have anything before we get to hot seat, cool throne?
Just that Kyle Shanahan is starting to look like Forrest Gump now.
Have
you seen the pictures of Kyle?
Well, he's wearing his losses.
He's wearing his losses big time.
Yeah, no, and he's got a death stare to him.
When you're wearing the light blue plaid button-up T-shirt all the way to the top, and you're sitting there looking like Forrest Gump on a park bench trying to hand out chocolates to people, but no one wants your chocolates because your chocolates haven't had their shoulder surgery yet. It's a very sad image to look at. And the way that he's talking about Jimmy Garoppolo, and I kind of feel bad
for
John
Jimmy. Lynch, they're really playing each other's words against each other.
Yeah, I feel bad for Jimmy now because, like, Kyle
Schefter's Schefter's I don't know
he's
what
wedging.
He's doing.
Yeah. Well, he's, you know, he Schefter
he increased his stock.
He's best friends with Don Yee.
And what they're doing is, like, they're publicly saying, yes, okay, we did try to trade Jimmy Garoppolo, but that doesn't mean that we don't want him here next year.
Right.
So it's almost a good problem that we have that we're unable to trade him. Now we've got him and Trey Lance at the same time. That's great, isn't it? And I just kind of feel bad for the guy.
Well, they kind of missed out on the whole, like, carousel. You know, like, all the quarterbacks are spoken for, including Andy Dalton, nice guy, signed with the Saints. But, yeah, it is – that is a weird situation. What are you going to say, Jake?
Claude Harmon won the 1948 Masters. He has two total PGA Tour wins.
There it is.
Claude Harmon, what a piece of
shit
he
was. That name was right on the tip of my tongue.
Total fraud.
I'm sure that there will be some golf hardos that will get really mad at me about the Mike Weir answer, but anyone who's, a lefty in golf – and Canadian sticks out in your mind forever.
Absolutely. Those are the two things.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yep, that's Mike Weir.
Hey, it's PFT here talking about Peloton. Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton encourages you to get moving by doing what you can. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. That's why they have instructors who motivate you from day one with thousands of classes from all levels to get you started. I love my Peloton. I'm back on the Buns of Anarchy. I've been back on the bike if you want to join Buns of Anarchy. Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
My hot seat is the Celtics and myself as a result. I did figure out what I was going to do. I did take some out. I took out 10 grand. So
good, responsible.
Good, responsible. That I'll always have that. And then I put I figured out the math so that it equaled $100,000 if it hits. Celtics and Duke championship parlay. It was like somewhere like $3,000, $3,600 or something. And then the next morning, Robert Williams, it came out that he has a torn meniscus. He's going to be out for at minimum 3 weeks, so hopefully if they can make it past the first round, then he comes back. But then it's like, who knows how healthy he'll be. Right now, Big Cat, I don't know if you look at the standings.
Oh, I've looked.
4-5, Celtics-Bulls, first round.
I was actually talking to our friend Roan this morning. I look at the standings every day. The Bulls are in free fall. They're terrible right now. I just do not want to play the Celtics, the Sixers, or the Bucks, because I don't want to have to deal with the fans of those teams. Just
what about the Nets, Frank Fleming?
I can deal with Frank. That's fine.
Well, Frank will be essentially rooting for the Bulls in that series.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Now, what about the Bucks? Why don't you like Bucks fans?
Well, Bucks fans are Packers fans. They'll come at me in, like, the Grayson Allen thing. There's some, you know, there's all that.
Having Grayson Allen, like, a dookie ruin your season with that hard foul on Caruso has got to be tough.
So I don't want that. No, Caruso's back. He's back. He's playing. He's playing well, but the Bulls aren't. I just want the Heat. I want to play the Heat, let the Heat just fucking smother us and just walk away and be like, all right, that didn't happen. I blacked out from January 15th was the last time I watched the NBA. That's what I'm going to tell myself, and the Bulls were awesome.
So, Hank, what kind of meniscus surgery? Is it going to be the long one or the short one? There are two kinds.
Sounds like the short one.
Sounds like the short one.
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, you can win a first-round play. I don't see a reason why he wouldn't be back in the second round, third round.
They definitely will beat whoever their matchup in the first round.
Well, it's interesting. That's what I was going to say, too, because on Sunday they won and they were, like, mathematically in first place for a minute, and then they lost last night and they're now in fourth place. But right now the Nets are the 8 seed.
Right.
And, like, Kyrie's back. No one wants to play the Nets.
No one wants to play the
Nets. I would rather be a 4 and play the Bulls than be a 1 and play the Nets, or a 2 and play the Cavs. Like, the Cavs are fucking nasty.
So what about this, Hank? Because it seems like there's still a great chance that they could win the NBA championship. Like, not that much has changed. If you think you can
get past the
first round.
The odds actually went down. The odds, when I put it in, was plus 1,000. It's plus 800 now, so it's, like, not super hot seat. But, I mean, Robert Williams is essential for them to win a championship.
You might want to double down on it. I think your only crime was being too right. You were too early on it.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. I've been thinking, I mean, now obviously, like, when you win a lot of money, you spend a majority of your time thinking about future bets. I know you guys have been in similar situations. I've been thinking about the can't-lose parlay that Big Cat's been talking about too much.
Kansas and Duke, Saturday night. How can it lose? It can't
lose. It makes too much sense.
It can't lose.
I've learned over my time, my history with Big Cat and gambling, that it does lose. It will lose somehow. Villanova is how it can lose.
How I have an idea for Villanova because I was thinking about it. And obviously Justin Moore being out is a problem for them. And we've talked about Jay Wright. You know, he doesn't wear suits anymore. I didn't realize his tailor passed away last year. He needs to bring back one of his favorite suits from his tailor who's deceased.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's got to do, a special Juju suit for Saturday night.
I've also been thinking about Villanova for the last couple of days. Jake and I talked about it before you got in the room, but I'm talking myself into Nova, I think.
Me too.
For a couple of reasons. One, the foul shooting. Best foul shooting team ever.
Plus sign.
Plus sign, that's number two. Jay Wright is a better tourney coach than Bill Self is.
But here's the issue.
I know their second leading scorer is out, but
no, it's not even
the guys
that.
On the bench have to be. They can't be bad, right? They can't be that bad. They play at Villanova.
So when I asked last night, all the responses were like, "The guys on the bench aren't bad, but they just have played bad." That seems like they're bad. They're like they have good. They're 4- and 5-star recruits, and then also there was a lot of we need to trust in baby Archie Diacono. And that feels
I don't
bad.
Like that. I don't like
they
that.
They also, all Villanova fans were like, Justin Moore didn't play the game against UConn, and we kicked the shit out of him. So there's a little confidence there. I don't think Villanova's, obviously, they're not going to roll over. I just don't know how you can go from we don't have any bench to we just lost a starter and be like, we're okay.
Yeah, also, like Kansas, they're kind of falling into the they ain't played nobody, Paul. Category in the tournament, at least.
Yeah,
they've had a pretty easy road to get here. Everybody's just thinking about the second half that they had against Miami. I don't know. I'm starting to talk myself into Nova. I think
I have a future on Nova that I'm just gonna that was lit on fire once Justin Moore went down. So let it ride.
V's up.
I know. I believe in Nova. I put a future on them, and it was the classic like, oh, they're going to the Final Four, and then they just lost a starting player when they have no bench.
But imagine if they beat Kansas and then
no, yeah, your no, final. See, was Hank trying to get you to bet on Villanova?
This has nothing to do with Hank. Okay. I was honestly
don't
just,
let
I was
him,
just
he wants.
I've been thinking about Villanova for the last
two
days.
He knows Villanova would be an easier game for Duke, so he doesn't.
Okay, this is where
trying
things
to influence.
This is
things.
Where things are getting dangerous yes. as a podcast yes. because Big Cat and Hank are now engaged in mental warfare against each other.
No,
where even
he's
though,
doing that.
He might be
since the game of the year. It's
there's
been mental warfare,
but there's also like subterfuge and subtext in the mental warfare that you're doing against each other that you guys are now also. If you haven't already started to invent ways that the other guy is fucking with you on something.
He wants Villanova to win.
I know.
Put a gun to his head.
He wants
Villanova to win. That's not subterfuge. There's no subcontext. He literally is saying to himself, if Duke beats UNC and Villanova beats Kansas, raise the banner.
I'm just saying the levels of like
yeah, look
espionage.
At his face.
I know he's
is
doing
that
it
wrong.
Now.
Probably not. So don't let him influence you.
I literally have not spoken with Hank about Villanova.
Okay, he's going to try to talk you into it.
Well, Hank.
Sounds like I don't convince you much.
Hank, don't talk to me about Villanova.
Don't.
Ever. All right. Ever.
Don't get mad at me when
no, never.
Villanova plus sign hits. And you
I'm
guys
not even
like,
talking about
you,
this tournament. I'm talking about
ever
FCS
again.
Football season, anything. Don't,
ever again.
Don't mention the word Villanova to me.
But if you want to hear about Villanova, we have Con Gillespie on the bench mob.
Oh, thank you, Jake. Wow. I'd love to hear that. Thanks, Gillespie.
Yeah, he didn't know who he was, by the way.
He didn't know who Colin Gillespie was?
No.
Legendary fullback, runner-up to the Lowman Trophy.
In Thursday. Great interview coming.
Okay, your cool throne, Hank?
Oh, my cool throne is the Don, 45.
Oh, yeah, you got me.
45. I mean, this was one of the funniest things I've ever read. Thought it was satire. He released a statement, and I'll just read the whole thing.
Yes, please.
Statement by Donald J. Trump, 45th President of the United States of America. Many people are asking...
Wait, Billy, please rise.
Many people are asking, so I'll give it to you now. It's 100% true. While playing with the legendary golfer Ernie Els, winner of 4 majors and approximately 72 other tournaments throughout the world. I don't know where the approximate
yeah, that's
comes
like
in there.
Darren Revell. I've got over 9.
Gene Sayers, winner of the Senior U.S. Open, Ken Duke and Mike Goods, both excellent tour players. I made a hole-in-one. It took place at Trump International Golf Club in West Palm Beach, Florida, on the 7th hole, which was playing at 181 yards in a slight wind. I had a 5-iron, which sailed magnificently. Jesus Christ. Cut that. Not really, but which sailed magnificently into a rather strong wind.
Okay, real quick, I'm going to stop you because this is my favorite part of the statement. He started that sentence by saying, on the seventh hole,
light breeze,
which was playing into a slight wind.
Yeah.
And then he hit the five iron and it sailed magnificently into a rather strong wind.
Right. It got stronger as you go up.
It does. Yeah, that's a fact.
Yeah.
With approximately 5 feet of cut, whereupon it bounced twice and then went clank into the hole. These great tour players noticed it before I did because they are slightly better, but on that one hole, only their swings weren't.
Okay, so this is another great part because he's giving credit to the tour golfers only for being able to see his hole in one go in better than he could.
That's perfect.
I fucking love it.
That is perfect.
Anyway, there's a lot of chatter about it. Quite exciting, and people everywhere seem to be asking for the facts. Playing with that group of wonderful, talented players was a lot of fun. The match was Ernie and me with no strokes against Gene, Mike, and Ken. I won't tell you who won because I'm a very modest individual, and you will then say I was bragging, and I don't like people who brag.
Thank you, sir.
That was it.
Thank you, sir. I respect the office.
That's fantastic.
I need to see the match. Version 3.0 of him against Kim Jong-un.
Mm-hmm.
I think Donnie's got some work cut out for him if he's going to get it up to 11 holes in one in a single round. But this is very funny. Like, objectively,
oh, yeah.
Anyone should be able to look at this and being like, this rocks that a guy went out, shot a hole in one, and then issued a presidential press release telling the world that he just got a hole in one.
If I was a former president and hit a hole in one, there absolutely would be a press release.
It also made me think that there should be a button that they have at Twitter that allows Donald Trump for like 6 hours reinstate his account after the
Why'd
slap.
You pick 6 hours?
I don't know, 7 hours.
Okay,
just so he could riff for a little bit. I want to give him some time to collect his thoughts and breathe. Like after the slap, I would have loved to have Donald Trump on Twitter.
Yeah,
reacting to
yeah,
that.
Just a moment
during halftime music shows at the Super Bowl. Yeah. I want to hear Donald Trump be like, "Dr. Dre is a disgrace." You know, I want to let him play the hits sometimes.
Yeah,
and this is a perfect example of why it would be good occasionally. To hear him chime in on stuff.
I actually would love to have him if Coach K wins his national championship because I'm sure he'd have like a backhanded compliment to him. It would make me feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know?
He only has slightly better hair than I do.
Yeah.
Your favorite president.
That would be nice. That would be nice. There was a moment this morning where there's something came out about the January 6th and also we had like 2 days after the Will Smith takes where it was like, this is back to a hell site where it was like, because the Will Smith discourse now is bad.
Oh yeah,
it's horrendous.
I mean, it was maybe an hour. I think Tom Fornelli said it the best. It was like the 9 minutes after something are hilarious, and then the 2 weeks after
it's
it
just
are
brutal, mm-hmm. brutal,
horrible.
There's a lot of takes out there like actually Will Smith was being misogynistic when he stood up for his wife and slapped Chris Rock. It is exhausting.
It's exhausting, dude.
We're not meant to hear everybody's thoughts.
Last night, I like for 20 minutes got like in it with people who still think it's fake. And I was like, what am I doing right now? The people online who think everything's fake, they could see something could happen to them and they'd be like, fake.
Mm-hmm.
Billy?
Because it's always a rush to be the first guy to say that something's fake.
And you never have to actually point to anything. You just be like, it's fake.
Look, this was going to be my hot seat.
Okay, go ahead.
There's a video out of Will Smith a month ago teaching a kid how to fake slap. I don't know if you guys seen this on TMZ.
He is an actor who has done movies where he's not actually hitting the other actors in the movie.
But I'm just saying, you know, it looks like a guy who's been practicing slapping.
So this is what Billy does sometimes. God. He doesn't really connect
it's
the
out
dots.
There.
He doesn't connect the dots. He puts a dot on a piece of paper and he's just like, there's a dot right there.
See that?
Somebody could draw that line.
You guys connect it.
Someone could draw it, but there's a dot.
I still don't get like we watched it with our eyes.
It was way too clean. Like, think about fight videos and, like, people slapping other people. Like, it's never that clean.
All right, so, but if it had been, like, a little murkier, you would have been like, see, he didn't try to hit him, really.
Right.
That's the thing.
Or if Chris Rock had hit him back, he'd be like, oh, wow, they really wanted to sell this.
Yeah.
There's, no matter what, you can just do every iteration of how this take place, and you could say it's fake.
Okay.
But right? We're right, though.
I'll let the sands of time.
Okay.
Wait for the facts to come out.
Wouldn't they have already said that it was fake by this point? Well, why would?
Yeah, Will Smith apologized.
They still sell the tickets.
But why wouldn't what
tickets?
What
tickets?
To Chris Rock's tour.
Yeah, I mean, I did see some people saying that the resale value went up, and I was like, well, what does that do? nothing for Chris Rock.
Yeah, I mean, imagine what would be going through Will Smith's mind where he's like, okay, you're about to win an Oscar for Best Actor. It's one of the biggest nights of your life. Let's go ruin it for a stunt that'll make Chris Rock's resale value go up for ticket math.
Well, and also, I'd also be like, hey, Chris Rock, for your tickets, for your upcoming tour, we want Will Smith to slap you in the face and have you do nothing on live television.
But also change.
You think Chris Rock would be cool with that?
Will Smith's narrative lately has been good since the Red Table. Kind of changes that narrative when he's like,
is it better? Is it better now? I'd say it's probably worse now.
I fully think it's that definitely it's, worse. It's yeah. real. I've switched my stance from Sunday night.
However,
I was reading some of the replies to your tweets, Big Cat. So this is a reply guy answer, but it was like the ratings have been bad, and doing the slap guarantees him the Oscar. Like, he wants the Oscar. What if it's like, we'll guarantee you.
What? But they already voted.
So the guy from PricewaterhouseCooper or whatever is going to go backstage, and he's going to change the envelope to say Will Smith because he just got up on stage and
they're
slapped Chris
sealed.
Rock.
He already knew he was winning the Oscar. The fact that, like, think about
which is why he
it.
Wouldn't Dude, do it.
Big Cat, our country is so fucked.
This is crazy.
I'm not. I believe it. I believe it's real, but it was interesting.
Hold on.
Like,
also, the ratings, people. It was the second lowest ratings of all time for the Oscars, and then people
pull out
like,
the slap.
And then people are like, "Well, next year, we'll see. I guess time will tell if next year's ratings are so insanely good because of this moment that we're all going to move on from."
Well, people might be watching and thinking, like, "Well, you know, the slap happened last year. Yeah. Something crazy.
Who knows who's going to get slapped?
Amy Schumer
this year.
In the Spider-Man costume.
Can I ask a question about the ratings? Do you think they might have wanted to do that earlier in the show if they were trying to get ratings? Instead of the last 25 minutes?
You don't know the analytics.
Okay. I mean, half of the country was asleep.
We actually don't know how ratings are calculated at all. We're just kind of taking a stab at the department.
But you think they'd do it at the beginning, right?
That it would be more valuable to get more eyes on the show earlier
right.
than it would be like at the end of the show.
Break the glass in case of low ratings.
If there's a needle, then the guy backstage hits the slap button.
Just do this forever.
And Will Smith gets his Apple Watch, starts buzzing. He's like, oh, shit, I got to go slap somebody.
Also, he was partying
his
ass off.
I've been training for this. Good thing I showed that kid how to do it a month ago.
Yeah. It's also the answer that I got the most is when it's like conspiracy theories have ruined everyone's brains, but then people be like, I'm sorry, I'm not a sheep that just believes everything that's forced into like down my throat. It's like, this is literally just a slap. This has no consequences whatsoever. It's not some big conspiracy that I even care about. It's a slap.
No, but I think the thing is, it's fun to be the first person to say that something's fake.
Yeah.
It's not really that fun to be like the 2 or 3 millionth person. Right. Be like, yeah, I agree. Right. That's fake.
Right.
The first guy, that guy has a great time.
He does when he can figure that out. Billy's looking for that rush. He was on it right away.
I don't blame him. Billy was one of the first people to think that it's fake.
Yeah.
No one reacts to someone walking up to them with their hands in their pockets.
No, I do all the time. Like if somebody that you know walks up to you.
He's on the Oscars.
My prediction is that there will be a Pepsi commercial this summer. Kendall Jenner gives them both a Pepsi, and they crack it open, and everything's copacetic.
And people will say it's fake because they did something together. They're definitely going to do something together. Of
cash
course
in.
They are.
They're going to cash in.
At this point.
That's America, baby.
We should do a slap. We could cash in, too.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Come over here, Billy.
Okay, I'll slap you.
Actually, anyone who wants to slap Billy can do it at any time.
No,
all
that's
listeners.
Not allowed. That's
what?
Not allowed.
Wait, you just said we wanted to do a slap.
Well, I was saying a stage slap so we could cash in on it.
This is stage. I'm literally telling people, go slap Billy. That's stage.
And it's not real.
It's not real.
No, you can't react.
Because I created it.
Well, it was a real, it was like a physical, real
slap. Make sure
slap.
You videotape.
No, that's so fucked up.
Yeah, don't slap
Billy. Do not slap
Billy. We will arrest you.
If you slap Billy, he has permission to kill you.
Yes, and also sue you.
Now I'm bringing the gun around.
Oh, Jesus. There we go. This is how quickly it escalates. God damn it.
This is how Ukraine started, Billy.
Yeah, fuck.
I think that, stay away from Billy. It is funny, though, like, seeing a slap in the wild is exhilarating.
Yeah.
And my life has been somewhat empty for the last 36 hours with no slaps. I need somebody else to get slapped. So any volunteers out there, any celebrity, you have to be a celebrity though.
Yeah.
And it has to be an unexpected situation, but life is not the same for me after the slap.
Yeah. All right. You have your hot seat PFT. I think that's where we are. I think we've jumped around a little.
Yeah, I think so. My hot seat, I was going to say Kim Jong-un actually, because of Donnie Trump. I'm still just so impressed with that statement.
Yes.
He's a fucking hilarious guy.
Yes.
My hot seat, I'm just going to say my addiction. So Jake has overcome his challenge, his dragons, and I think you're – how long are you clean now off the no spray, Jake?
I want to say a year-ish.
That's a long time. That's impressive.
Yeah.
I fell into the traps that Jake fell into last year. I had a cold for the last couple weeks, and I've been taking instant relief nose spray, and then I just kept using it every day. And so now it's been about 3.5 weeks where every night before I go to bed, and sometimes during the day I have to take it, because if I don't take it at night, my nose just completely closes up. So Jake is my sponsor right now. And Jake, I haven't used today.
I tweeted you this morning.
Thank you. I'm taking it one day at a time. But it is actually, it is addictive. Your nose just stops working if you take
it. Like God, right?
Yes.
It's like clear.
That's more aggressive than what I was going to say. But yeah, it's like a perfect drug. And now I can't fall asleep without it. So tonight is going to be the real challenge.
Good luck.
So thank you very much. Jay, congratulations, though. That's impressive that you're a year off the hard stuff.
Thank you.
My brother actually saw me tweet about it, and he hit me up. He was like, are you okay? Are you okay? And I was like, yeah. He's like, that sounds scary. My cool throne is going to be...
sounds like you don't have
Costa
one.
Rica.
Oh, there it is.
Costa Rica. Because
were you looking at a map when you did
that? No, because I had to move some. I moved some stuff around because I realized that Donald Trump was actually on my cool throne.
Got it.
And then my hot. Yeah, it's old switcheroo musical chairs. But yeah, Costa Rica, because I think we were a little premature in crowning the U.S. men's national team to be dancing.
Oh yeah, there's a goal differential thing.
So if the U.S. team loses,
yeah, no,
by,
I knew this.
If they lose, Christ. If they
I agree,
wait, Hank,
it's
if they lose by six goals tonight, then they don't automatically qualify. So, I, as a giant U.S. men's national team soccer fan, I can admit that if they lose by six goals tonight and don't qualify, that is fucking hilarious.
It would be very funny.
That would be very... I hope it doesn't happen, but it would be very, very, very funny. So I hope either they win or they lose by six or more goals tonight.
Who are they playing?
Costa Rica.
Costa Rica.
Because then Costa Rica would jump above us in the CONCACAF octagonal, and they would get the automatic qualification. We would play against New Zealand probably.
Love it. Let's win that
winner
game.
Take all. So,
or don't lose by six.
Yeah, or just lose by six.
Or lose by six.
That'd be very funny.
I'm fine with anything that happens on that one. All right, my hot seat is Matt Rhule. That picture, it really is like this is what happens when you have Sam Darnold as your quarterback. It's the khakis, the ill-fitting khakis, the wrinkles, the untucked shirt. Every year, one coach steals the show. You hope it's Andy Reid with a Hawaiian shirt. Instead, it's Matt Rhule looking like he's behind on his mortgage and everything in life sucks.
Guayabera shirt. Was that what he was wearing?
I don't know.
Big bowling shirt?
Yeah.
With the wide shoulders. It looked like he was... he looked like a child wearing like his dad's shoulder pads on Halloween.
This is a guy who spit on himself, and now this is the worst look he's had.
He should...
Spitting on himself is not the worst look. It's the second worst.
What's crazy is if you're running down the Matt Rhule looks... The worst is this one. Second worst is spitting on himself. And then the best look that he's ever had is when he's an adult male wearing a smock on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
That's the swaggiest he's ever appeared.
When he in the right light looks like Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah,
that's
but
it.
Like Vincent D'Onofrio from Men in Black.
Right.
After he gets taken over by an alien.
Right. But you're like, ooh, I could see it. And then my cool throne is LeBron. So investigative research by Kenny Beecham on Twitter. At KOT4Q, he found out, here he looked it up, and every single time the Lakers lose a game and they post the final score on Twitter, they never include a picture of LeBron. So cool throwing LeBron. He's never been a part of a loss this year.
And also, he also did the other metrics, which was every time they win a game,
yes.
who gets featured,
yes.
and LeBron gets featured far and away as the winning player.
I absolutely think this is in his contract.
Yeah.
He definitely put this in his contract. Like, you cannot include me in any lost pictures.
And in a weird way, I almost respect it.
Well, I mean, whatever. He's and poor Malik Monk, the part of Kenny's.
He's the scapegoat. Yeah,
yeah. He had the majority of the losses.
I wonder if this goes back to his time with the Cavs. I actually don't know if teams were doing the mandatory win-loss tweet graphic right. at the end of games. That's like a thing in the last 2 years that they got sponsored.
That's so funny. I love it every single time. All right, Billy, you already did your hot seat?
Yeah, the hot seat was the video. And my cool throne is spreadsheet's probably going to work out.
Oh.
So we're going to throw 100 on Villanova and Duke in a parlay.
Yeah.
Which is going to, you know, negate a lot of their, because they're the most negatives right now. And then put 100 on Kansas money line. Actually, 100 on the future for Kansas, and we'll see how it plays out.
Nice.
So,
and then we're going to put some on the women's. Oh, then we're putting all
on the women's.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. So NC State, like, adding to Hell Week, they lost in, I think, double overtime to UConn. And UConn, NC State was the one seed, and they had to play at UConn.
In Bridgeport.
It makes no fucking sense.
It was a clutch shot at the end of the first overtime, though.
But just
that was
brutal.
Good.
It's tough.
They'll always have that.
Yeah, they'll always have that.
That in their 2020 College World Series.
Yeah, that's... And I forgot that NC State's bowl game got canceled the day of.
And
remember that against UCLA?
Baseball had the College World Series forfeit.
Yeah, what?
Well,
wow. Uh-oh. Jake.
Wait.
No tap time.
I thought they were the best team.
No tap time.
Jake, Hank said that on yesterday's show, and I just said it like 30 seconds ago. Oh, no.
I had NC State as my hot seat. I was ready, and I just got...
Oh, no. Oh, no, Jake.
Oh, Jake. Listen, it's madness. It's Marsh Madness. But, yeah, they had... I had forgotten the bowl game, remember, because I think it was in San Diego, the Holiday Bowl, and they canceled it so close to kickoff that there were, like, people tweeting, I'm literally driving to the stadium right
now.
Yeah,
I do remember that. Yeah. In the last 25 years, what do you think is the best thing that's happened to NC State football? You could make the argument.
Phillip Rivers.
Well, they had a little run where they were the College of Quarterbacks, where you had Phillip Rivers, Russell Wilson, Jacoby Brissett, and Mike Lennon.
Before
Duke was Duke, NC State was a powerhouse.
Yeah.
100 years ago.
Yeah. They had Chuck Amato and his cool sunglasses.
Yeah, they've had a few years where they've beaten like UNC or Duke in a cool game. Julius Hodges, what do you say?
By the time you listen to this, the McDonald's All-American blog should be up.
Yeah.
Wednesday morning.
Yeah. Also, Arkansas got three of them. Did that trigger you a little with Eric Musselman when he had that picture?
Yeah, no. Huge trading.
Yeah.
Really set off some bad memories.
Eric Musselman had three, I think it was McMuffins, on his desk because they had just signed three McDonald's All-Americans, which is crazy.
The yellow wrappers, I can't really get over it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Jake, welcome back.
Hot seat is me, I guess. I had this tweet pulled off for my NC State on the hot seat. It was the three bullet points. That was the point.
Yeah.
Baseball, COVID forfeit, football, canceled, women's, loses, tough game.
Yes. It was a tough game. I think I like Stanford now. I just like rooting for the tree every now and again.
Yeah.
We could have an all-Cardinal final.
Yeah. I saw in UConn, what is that, like 15 years in a row they've been
22 out of 37 years for Juneau going to the Final Four.
Jesus Christ.
It's insane. I have two cool thrones to redeem myself. One.
We'll be the judge of that.
Is Albert Pujols.
Mm.
He announced a retirement tour returning to the Cardinals.
Yes.
Retirement tours are cool.
Well, it's even more nauseating because he's doing this so that he and Yachty can retire at the same time and go into Cooperstown at the same time. So, puke everywhere.
But you guys have never said bad things about retirement tours.
This is... So. All my enemies are doing retirement tours.
Yeah. And then,
except Rodgers, who I really want to do.
Also, the Detroit Lions.
Yes.
Hard Knocks.
Hard Knocks.
2022.
Could possibly save the franchise. And then everyone replied, the Colts in season was really cool, which it was, but it was in season. And I'd like, Hard Knocks, true Hard Knocks is the appetizer for the football season that gets you excited.
They should not call the in season Hard Knocks Hard
Correct.
Knocks. It should be something 24/7 altogether. Yeah,
yeah right.
Because
it is cool.
It is cool. We love Hard Knocks, and I think having Dan Campbell in Hard Knocks should be at the very least exciting.
And Jared.
And you got Jared. You've got, I think Mark Brunell is their quarterback coach now.
Really?
Yeah, I think I heard that from somebody. But they've got a fun team that's set up to maybe do something this year, and obviously Dan Campbell factor. That's gonna be must see TV. So yeah. I'm pumped about that.
Mark Brunell, quarterback coach.
To correct myself from earlier, Danny Willett won the Masters in 2016. That was his only PGA Tour win.
I remember Danny Willett.
That was the Jordan Spieth choke job.
It was
okay. So that's probably it right there.
That was maybe episode 3 or 4 of Part of My Take.
Yeah, Danny Willett. Okay.
Makes
good
sense.
Answer.
Yeah,
good
it was
answer.
Like right at the start.
Yeah, I'll still do notes off if you guys want, but.
Yeah,
context.
Okay, Willett makes sense.
Yeah.
So sorry for Mike Weir.
Sorry for the double NC State thing.
All right, let's get to our interviews. We got Buzz Williams, and then we got Trent Brown coming up right after it. PFT, you got what are you drinking these days?
I'm drinking Body Armor, baby. Body Armor Edge, more specifically. Body Armor Edge is a great drink. You've seen us drink it on some of these live streams. We actually love the taste. I like the Strawberry Slam. The Watermelon Wave is really good, too. It's all that we're drinking for the big tournament. We're energized and we're hydrated. Those are the two things that you need to get through a day. You need to have the energy to conquer it. You need to have the hydration to perform at your best. From the makers of our favorite sports drink, Body Armor, Body Armor Edge has 100 milligrams of caffeine and 1,000 milligrams of electrolytes to keep you going through another crazy tournament. So that's about equivalent to the same amount of caffeine that you have in a cup of coffee. Plus, it's got 1,000 milligrams of electrolytes and antioxidants, B vitamins, no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or dyes. It's more than just a sports drink. It's Body Armor Edge. Push through the highs and the lows of the tournament with our favorite sports drink and caffeine, Body Armor Edge. Find Body Armor Edge at 7-Eleven, or you can order it on Amazon. Now, here is Buzz Williams.
Okay, we now welcome on recurring guest, friend of the program. Haven't seen him in, I don't know, 3-4 years now. Yep. It is Coach Buzz Williams from Texas A&M. Last time we had him on, different school. I wanted to give you a compliment to start.
Thanks.
And you don't know what the compliment is yet.
It's rare that I get one, so whatever you say is
okay. All right, so you know last time we had you on, we came to your facility, we did a video. It was very, very early.
Yep.
This is not as early. It's 10:30 in the morning on a Monday, but for us, getting up on a Monday and getting in by 10:30, we don't do it for just anyone. So I want you to know that, like, this is if you look around the room, we've all been up a little late, and we're here because we love you.
Thank you so much. I love you guys. I'm sorry you had to start your week a little earlier than normal.
Yeah.
10:30 is late.
It is. On a Monday, it's early.
For us, it is. I think typically we're about, I don't know, 4 hours ahead of schedule. But the last time that we did see you was in Blacksburg.
Yep.
And we came to your gym at, I think it was...
It was like 6 a.m.?
I don't even know what that word means when I say 6 a.m. It's like not in my vocabulary.
Yeah. I still have pictures from it.
Yeah. You put us through the ringer in a real quick workout.
Kate was the best player.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Is like, if you were to rank us from best to worst, you'd still have Kate number one.
Yeah, I think Kate is for sure number one. I don't know that any of the rest of you would be worthy of being on a list, but Kate would be one.
Yeah,
Kate would be one.
That was a great video, and very fun that you did that with us. So you're here, NIT.
Yep.
We're going to run this on Wednesday. So hopefully you're still in it.
That would be great if we are.
Yeah, the question I always wonder about the NIT, obviously you guys have a great run in the SEC tournament.
Yep.
Disappointment not getting to the NCAA tournament. There was a lot of argument back and forth.
Sure.
If you win the NIT, is that a little vindication? Like, hey, we really should have been part of it. Is that the motivation behind this run?
Yeah, obviously I said what I said, and I haven't spoke on it again because I said what I believe needed to be said relative to our players and their parents and our institution. And the one thing that I've learned, Big Cat, it's only the second time that I have participated in the NIT. Only one time did we do it at Virginia Tech. It was our second year there. Never have advanced to the Final Four. I think every team probably has a little different motivation in the NIT.
Mm-hmm.
Is your team young? Has your team ever experienced postseason? Does your team really understand the difference between the NIT and the NCAA? Did they feel like they should have been in the NCAA? Are they grateful to be in the NIT? You know, there's a different vibe. And I think the vibe for us relative to our program, it has changed over the 3 weeks that we've actually participated in the NIT. And a lot of those lessons you don't know prior to the first game. You know, we played in the SEC championship game on a Sunday afternoon. Obviously, it's the championship game, so it's the only game left to be played in Tampa. And you have to tell the plane when you're going to leave. Well, how are we going to handle this? We don't want to stay in the arena 3 more hours until the selection show. So let's just go back to the hotel and rent the rooms for another night, even though we're not going to stay another night. And then you're wondering, without ever saying it, are we playing in the NCAA tournament?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to leave Tampa and go to Dayton because we're playing in the first four and we barely got in?
Right.
Are we not going to the NCAA tournament? Whatever transpires, what is it as the head coach that I'm going to say to our guys? So we start the game against Tennessee down 15-2 and end up losing 15. It was our fourth game in 4 days. We go back to the hotel, and I say, guys, why don't you shower and change and go ahead and put your stuff on the bus, and I'll see you guys in what we had been using as our team room, and we'll watch the selection show. It's the first time in our tenure at Texas A&M. This is our third season. Obviously, year one, there wasn't a selection show, and we were awful last season. So it was our first experience as a program watching the selection show. Here comes bracket one and a commercial, bracket two and a commercial, bracket three and a commercial. And, you know, every kid is kind of on a different level in their understanding of, like, what is this? They all act like they understand. They don't know.
Right.
Not all of them.
Right.
And so when the last bracket popped up and we're not playing, I honestly didn't know what to say. And I didn't have anything to say. And so I said, guys, get on the bus. And so we left the banquet room, down the escalator, down the elevator, to the bus, to the FBO, got home at midnight that night. Well, the NIT selection show happened while we were on the plane. So I anticipated we were going to go to the NIT.
Right.
But I also anticipated we were going to go to the NCAA.
Yeah.
And so we land, take the bus back to the office, and we call it Team Bus One. The people that are on Team Bus One, everybody go in my office, and we printed out the bracket. And I said, guys, we're taking tomorrow off. Well, our first game was Tuesday.
Yeah.
That was the next day.
It was that fast. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think as it has unfolded, the things that we've learned and the fun that we've had and the experience that can never be taken away from our guys. This is the first time Texas A&M basketball has played in the NIT seven times, and obviously they have never been to New York. So a lot of what's transpiring is historical, and we're grateful for that. And hopefully when this is released on Wednesday, hopefully the Aggies are still playing.
Yeah,
and this is probably something that you can build off of. I don't know what the stats are on it, but a team that does well in the NIT, I would imagine, kind of carries a little bit of that momentum into the following season, right?
We're one of the younger teams in the country. And even younger relative to experience with one another. Obviously, those numbers have changed together over the last 38 games, and that's been really good stuff. But there's so many young guys on our team. There's only one guy that for sure is not returning. I know in this day and age that doesn't mean everybody's coming back. But, yeah, the practices, the film session, the camaraderie, the experience, the actual games, playing against teams in Power 5 leagues that you haven't had an opportunity to play. Our administration, Ross Bjork, our AD, made a decision to let the NIT games be for free. So the environment at Reed Arena has been tremendous in our three games there. So there's a lot of good things. Obviously, it's almost Easter, you know, and we're still playing. There's only eight teams still playing. So we haven't taken a break, but I do think when we're able to finish the season, hopefully we finish with a win. There's so much that we can build on for sure.
I also think like the NIT and the CBI, all these tournaments, yep. They're fun just because if you've ever been part of a team, you know that like that last time when it's like, hey, this is now changing, we're not playing together anymore, is brutal. So to have that stretch where it's like, hey, we can still do this. We're spending time together. We're you know, bonding together. No matter what, even if it's a young team, next year's team's going to be different somehow. Always will be.
The one thing that transpires that kids figure out almost – it's almost like osmosis. They begin to figure it out, and it happens at different points in times. And it's happened with this team. Our team wants to win. Every team wants to win. But there is an intangible quotient of our team just wants to continue to be together.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the reason why they want to win is they know, okay, tomorrow we're doing film, tomorrow we're lifting weights, tomorrow we have practice, tomorrow we're traveling, tomorrow they want that to keep going.
Right.
And right. And there's something about, like, we're fighting for one another. We're fighting because we want to win. But the ego part of winning, it's really not the ego of look at me. It's like, no, we want to stay together. And they're wise enough, regardless of their age, to go, as soon as the horn sounds and we lose, that's the swan song.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they have played like that at a competitive level even since we got to Tampa. When it's, you know, lose and go home and survive and advance, whatever the thing every other coach says, our guys don't use those words. I don't use those words, but they want to keep playing so that we can continue to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you guys the hottest team in college basketball right now?
There, you would have to do some study on it. We've won 12 out of our last 14. We lost at Vanderbilt, and then we lost to Tennessee. Obviously, Tennessee was in the championship game, and then we lost at Vanderbilt by 6 in that stretch of 14 games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one thing that I told our team, like Washington State won 4 out of their last 5 regular season games. They won 1 and lost the second one in the Pac-12 tournament, and then they've won 3. So they've won 8 out of 10. We won 4 out of our last 5. We won 3 out of 4 in the SEC tournament, and then obviously we've won 3. If you were to rewind, PFT, it would be the game after Valentine's Day we played at Vanderbilt. So since Valentine's Day through today, we've lost 2 games, the SEC championship and then at Vanderbilt.
It's not bad, and I think you got to take it, you know, look at the situation that you're in right now, and you can't control where you're at right now. You can just, you know, control what you're going to do.
That's right.
But there's some silver lining to it in that you're able to put together a nice little run. You're able to keep these guys together.
Yep.
A lot of them, it sounds like, will be coming back next year.
That's right.
And on one hand, it's almost like this is a better outcome for what you're building on than if you had gotten to the tournament and lost in, like, the second round.
Yep.
You know, the team's still together. They're experiencing success in a tournament. I feel like that's a pretty good position to be in after you get over the anger and frustration of not being invited to the NCAA tournament. I think that, like, you can look at the silver lining in this and make a pretty good case that you're better off right now than you would have been had you gotten bounced early.
I don't disagree with that at all. We've won 26 games. We've lost 12. Obviously, we have been playing at a very high level and have been successful. And I think that's one of the things similar to what we were talking about earlier. Your initial response and your reasoning for wanting to compete in the NIT, it morphs, it changes, it evolves. And you notice it in different ways relative to the relationship as a head coach you have with each of your players. And one of our freshmen, who is completely into ball and knows what's going on in recruiting and knows about this coach and knows about this player, and this kid's name is in the portal. Coach, we need to recruit him. Coach, what about this? Like, he's going to grow up and be a coach. And we win the first game, and we play Oregon a morning game because TV's dictating when we play based on when the NCAA tournament games are. So we play Oregon at whatever time. It's like noon.
It was like 11 a.m.
It's like 11 a.m.
I remember that game.
So the kid is texting me that evening, and he's like, Coach, did you watch this game? Did you watch that game? He's talking about NCAA tournament games.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, no, I'm watching Wake Forest. That's the I'm watching Wake Forest and VCU right now. We're going to play the winner.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of know what's happening in the NCAA tournament. We're playing in a different one. And he's like, Coach, we're still playing. And it kind of hit me like he was beginning to see the silver lining. Like you said, this kid, he's going home.
Mm-hmm.
That guy, his season's over. We're still playing. Yes, we want to play in the NCAA tournament, but there is some residual positive value that you discover, particularly, I think, and I don't say this arrogantly, particularly if you're able to get all the way to New York.
Right.
Because like you're saying, hey, we played in the NIT and we got beat on Tuesday night after Selection Sunday. Okay, well, that didn't last long, but it's similar to what you're saying. We played all the way until Selection Sunday. If we played that early game Thursday morning in the NCAA tournament and you lose, you're home Thursday night,
yeah,
and now it's over.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that we've had time to process all of that, and I do think there's some wisdom that comes from the experience we've been able to be a part of over the last 20 days.
So in your run in the SEC tournament, I don't know if you saw, but I clipped your speech after one of the games. I think it was after the Saturday game when you beat Auburn. You talked about how every day you give your team a red pill. And I mentioned that did you know the connotations of that online when you did that? Because it was very funny to me, because the blue pill, red pill has become like a terrible argument online about politics. And then you showed up on a Saturday afternoon in March being like, yeah, I'm just waking up, I'm giving my whole team the red pill. And I was like, yeah, fuck yes, Buzz.
Yeah,
he's like, he has no idea what this means online, but I love it.
Yeah, and I think that that's a microcosm of what a very narrow lane I live in.
I know.
Because I can't remember who mentioned it to me. It may have been Sivas, like, 4 days later, because we had another. We played Auburn, then we played Arkansas, then we played Tennessee, and it was like Groundhog Day every day at Tampa. And so anyway, and then basically 2 days later, I'm giving the statement to the world on I don't agree with what transpired. So I haven't been the most liked, and nor have I ever been the most liked coach. But Sivas said, "Coach, you remember when you were talking? I love Damian Fishback, the kid that played at Auburn for Cliff Ellis, who's the oldest coach next to Jim Boeheim, still coaching. And so I've always really liked him because I think he knows what's going on. I think he knows how to talk to coaches. He's not so opinionated that you can't visit with him." And his question, I thought, was right. And I made mention of what is the actor's name? Lawrence Fishburne,
yeah,
and Keanu Reeves and The Matrix. And we do quote shirts. I know you had – I gave you some when you guys came to Blacksburg. We do 12 a year. And the red pill from the movie, and that's how I spoke on the lesson, was you have to be willing to receive the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about the red pill maybe 300 times this season. Not only do you have to receive the red pill, but you have to be willing to administer it. And mm-hmm. I can't be the only doctor of the red pill. I need to be a patient of the red pill. You guys need to tell me the red pill. And you need to tell one another. And so, like, if you say red pill within our program, that's all we know.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Sivas was mentioning what the other groups deem the red pill, I'm like, Sivas, man, tell Big Cat, you know, I have no concept what you're talking about. I thought personally
that you were launching an attack against the deep state, College Station.
I thought you were basically saying that, you know, we as incels have to stand up for our rights.
No, that's black pill.
Oh, that's black pill.
Do that next year. Black pill.
Anything in that realm, you guys know, like, I'm so far removed.
That was the best part about it, because you mentioned I knew, like, your message was a perfect message for your team, because the idea is, like, you need to speak hard truths to your players every day.
That's right.
But I'm just sitting there laughing because I'm like, Coach does not go online. Like, he has no idea what he's saying now in the greater scheme of online discourse.
Yeah, I have no concept about anything like that. Just almost living an alternate reality from what. I mean, you guys know that. You guys talk to enough coaches, and I think that's why coaches love you guys, is they kind of feel like they can be themselves and not have to put on airs and such, and like. In our world, there's very few people that you can talk to of the magnitude and the platform that you guys have, where a coach feels like he can be himself. And I think that's why coaches think the world of you guys. But, like, yeah, man, I had no idea. When he was reading, he was saying, Coach, you know, on the internet, I'm like, Sivas, first of all, if you're talking about the internet, I'm out. Yeah. Like, I don't even have a computer. I don't check my email. Like, I don't even know how to check my email. So, like, yeah, I'm not in that.
Well, that's why we love coaches, too.
Yeah.
Because they do live in their own world. That's They're right. so locked in,
yeah.
and they live, breathe, eat this stuff. And we find, like, that's – it's almost beautiful that there are people out there that – it really doesn't just end at coaching. If somebody's just – really into whatever their craft yeah. is and singularly focused, that type of person is very fascinating to me and somebody yeah. that I think that people can learn from. So when you go about your day, what percentage of the hours that you're awake are you thinking about basketball?
Good question.
Yeah. That's very high. I read a lot, I study a lot. And I try to give my first hour of the day to non-basketball related. I'm just trying to feed my brain.
So you're offering to the world of 1 hour a day of not thinking about basketball.
Yeah, what is like, do you reading like message boards and stuff?
Oh, no. I literally don't use a computer.
I'm kidding.
I read four books at a time, and I read one book per week, and I've done that for years.
How can you read four books at a time? I would get confused. I would get mixed up.
Yeah, I read... Yeah, it's a little complicated, but I read one in the morning when I'm talking about the 1 hour I study, and then I read one when I calm down after I've planned practice. I just kind of sit for 30 minutes and kind of make sure that what I have planned along with the staff is right, so I read. And then I read when practice is over to kind of think through practice and make sure we did the right things and what we need to do the next time. And then I read at night before I go to bed. The first three are to learn from. The last one is in hopes that it'll help put me to sleep. But I've been doing that for years. I could show you every book I've read every week for however many years you would want to know. And then I take notes on each book. And so if you said, hey, Buzz, I read this book. Have you read it? I could look at my filter and I could say, yeah, I've read it. I'll send you my notes on it.
I think you just invented Spark Notes.
Yeah, I know what that is, and people have told me about it. I don't know that I would know how to use it, but yes, it's my version
of
that.
So Spark Notes, when you're taking notes about your books, are you recapping what you've read to lock it in, or are you like writing down your personal reaction to what you've read?
Both. What I'm learning, how does it translate to what I need? And then what is it that ignited a thought from what I was reading on what I'm currently doing and how to do it better? So it's like if you looked at my notes on that book, 80% of it you would go, yeah, this came from the book, and this must have been what Buzz was thinking when he was reading the book.
Okay.
And it's kind of the same thing. Like if you look in the book, the young lady that does all of my notes, you know, I'll think of a play while I'm reading and just go to the back and just draw the play. And then she puts it on fast draw, and that's part of my book notes. But I've been doing that for a long, long time. That's one of the gifts that I give to friends that I have that I write every month are my book notes from the month.
Yeah, so yeah. I was going to ask about that because the first time we had you on the show, I think what really made us like you a lot is the story of how you got your first job coaching and how you just would write notes. You would write these letters all the time to the point where when a lady on campus had you hooked up with like free postage.
That's correct. Multiple ladies. Yes, sir.
So are you still writing these notes? Or is it like a follow-up thing that you're doing right now? How big is your correspondence network?
Yeah, thanks. If you looked at my calendar, right now, this is my 15th year as a head coach. That daily discipline is write, call, email, text. So if you looked at my calendar, there's 9 disciplines per day that I do. I'm going to have a quiet time for 1 hour every morning. I'm going to read one book a week. So on Sunday, it says one of the boxes is one book. But each day there's a box that says 3x25. I'm going to read 25 pages from 3 different books. WCET, write, call, email, text. So if you turned the month of March over and looked at the back of my calendar, there would be 120 names. 60 of those names are for me to learn from. 30 of those names are specific to Texas A&M. The president, the chancellor, the AD, the deputy AD, the largest donor, etc. And then there's 30 that are connected to basketball. So those are my 120, and I rotate that list 10% every month. So there's 120 people on the list. 12 are going to fall off, and a new 12 are going to come on for April. And so that's 120 people that I'm going to, in essence, write a handwritten note to. And then every day, 7 days a week, every day of the year, I write two thank you notes. And it can't be basketball specific. So I have a manager that will read the Texas A&M paper, the local paper. Here is John Smith, and he just worked and developed whatever thing, and he got a grant. And so I would write John Smith at Texas A&M a note. Hey, I just heard about you receiving your grant. Congratulations for all the work. And then the same thing within Brazos County. That's the county that Texas A&M is in, obviously. So-and-so just saved someone from a car accident and pulled them out at the scene. Find, you know, the manager, hey, hustle up and find out who that person is, what their name is, what their address is. I'm going to write them a note. So I write 120 people, 60 are to develop a relationship with, 30 are the people that in essence I work for, and 30 are connected to the game of basketball, regardless of where I'm employed. That's 120, and then I write two thank you notes every single day, so that's 60. So it's 180 notes that I write every month.
And now, don't take this the wrong way, but you're crazy.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I have a lot of problems.
But you saying that out loud, and I mean that in a good way, because you're doing crazy for good. Like, it's incredible what you're doing. Even talking about reaching out to random people, that's awesome. We need more of that in the world. Yeah. But you are crazy.
Yeah. Well, that it's like it's the red pill, though. It's just accepting of that. And our players say the same thing. Coach, you got a lot of problems. Yes, sir, I understood that, but I told you that when I was recruiting you.
Yeah, he's like, using your problems for good, too.
That's right.
We got to get you
good. Harnessed your power
in
a hyper-focused way where you're just a note-writing machine.
Yeah, but it doesn't change. I don't mean this in a condescending way. It's like, how do you read a book a week? It's just my habit.
Right.
I've been doing it for a long, long time. I was doing it before I was doing podcasts.
Right.
Well, where do you find time to write so many thank you notes? I was doing that like long before I was appointed a head coach anywhere. So it's not like my wife, obviously. I've been married almost 22 years now, and we dated for a couple of years before that. And so she met me when I was a Division II assistant. And so, like, as our life has unfolded, we have four kids. My two sons know. My two sons are more excited that I'm here than I am. Like, they know everything about you guys. They've listened to every podcast. They know who these people are. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything. You know what I mean? Like, I know the last time I saw you guys in Blacksburg, that's what I know. But my point is some of what is being revealed publicly now, I am administering the red pill. I'm telling the truth, but I'm not administering the red pill so everybody goes, wow, look at Buzz. Actually, not at all.
Yeah, it's authentic.
I was doing that
long
before I met you guys at Virginia Tech, long before I was at Marquette. Like, that stuff is just that's a part of my life.
Yeah.
And that helps keep me grounded. I want to write thank you notes. It keeps my heart in the right place. I want to learn. I want to read. I want to study. It's the only way I can be malleable enough to keep up with the pace of this business, the pace of this world. You guys know about the changes in college athletics, specifically over the last year and a half. I'm sure you've had conversations with coaches. Over the next 5 years, there will be more changes in college athletics than any previous 10-year period.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of the ability to not be able to adjust. And so I don't want to become so comfortable. Buzz, you do not have to write 120 people a month. I completely understand.
Right.
I actually agree, but that's even more reason why I want to do it.
It's who you are at this point.
That's right.
You don't want, you don't want to stop being who you are.
That's right.
Because being who you are has gotten you to this place where you are right now. That's pretty damn good.
Thank you.
Do you ever write a thank you note to yourself?
No.
Like, thanks.
I make it,
for continuing to write thank you notes.
That's a tradition within our program. If we spend the night at a hotel, we're going to be at a locally owned gym the next morning for the Get Better group. And then the night prior to the game, which typically speaking is the night that we're there, everybody on Team Bus 1 has to write a thank you note. And you cannot write a thank you note to anyone that you have previously wrote a thank you note to. So, you know, you tell a kid, hey, write a thank you note. The first person they're going to write is their mom. Mm-hmm. The second person they're going to write is their grandma. The third person they're going to write is their aunt. The fourth person is if there is a male figure in their life. But when you get to, like, number 5 or 6, they don't know who to write. Most of them have never written a thank you note. They don't know how to address the envelope. Literally, they don't know how to address the envelope. They don't know the person's address. They don't know how to write a thank you note. Where does the date go? Where do I write my name? Where do I write their name? And so that has been a tradition for, I guess, 15 years now. If we spend the night in a hotel, before you eat the dinner, you have to write a thank you note. So I don't know what time we eat tonight. It's Monday. We're going to eat tonight at 8 o'clock. As soon as everybody on Team Bus walks in, there's the people that have cooked our meal. There's not one person that will even touch the food. You have to write a thank you note, and that's the ticket to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Write a thank you note, and then you give it to the person that collects the thank you notes.
I love it because it is like that is something that is lost, just the gratitude and just going the extra mile of saying like thank you to people in your life, because we lose it day to day and we don't take those moments. So I'm in for this. We should start doing it.
And what ends up happening, this is me, and how this started was I read a book. It was one of my books. And the guy started at the bottom, worked his way up, became a CEO, was doing everything, had everything. Materialistically did all the right things and then lost everything materialistically, lost his wife, lost his children, lost his relationships, lost his job, and ends up in some little one bedroom apartment. And he goes through multiple issues of substance abuse, and on the backside of it realized that on his way up, his heart was never in the right place. So when he got to the top, his heart was still not in the right place. And while he was at the top, because his heart was not in the right place, he couldn't lead. And you can't be authentic as a leader if your heart is in the wrong place. And it's like I tell our players all the time, true love doesn't have an agenda. If there's an agenda as a leader, I love Big Cat because it's the most listen to podcast. Okay, well then I want to be on Pardon My Take. But the reason I like you guys, I have no idea.
Right.
And like I tell Sivas, I don't really want to know, because then it's going to interrupt my juju with these guys. Like, that's Big Cat, that's PFT. Is Kate going to be there? And they're like, Coach, she's not on the podcast. I'm like, well, I didn't know. Last time I saw her, she was in the gym.
Yeah, and we walked up to her just when you walked in.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, I know that sounds strange, but it's not strange in my brain.
No, I get it. I get it. Yeah, you're trying to live as authentically as possible, which is probably pretty tough to do in a position like you have.
It's so, and I tell our players all the time, you know, you hear people say, you know, you got to tighten your circle. I don't think that that's the right words. Your circle has to become a dot. And people think, and I've lived it. Man, I'm an assistant coach, and I'm trying real hard, and I'm getting to know this person. I'm meeting this guy, and I'm learning this, and I know this recruit, and I met this AD, and I met this search firm, and I met this agent, and this and that. And you get to moving and moving and moving and moving. And then all of a sudden, when you, quote, make it, are you prepared? Because then once you get there, if you don't know how to lead, it's like I tell our players, I do not want to recruit you if when I ask, what is your biggest dream? If you tell me your biggest dream is to make the NBA, I do not want you to come play for us. That is so limited. That is so shallow. I want to make the NBA. I understand how hard it is. I know there's only 450. I know the numbers of it, the math of it, way better than I could articulate. But if that's what you're telling me your dream is, I don't want you to come play with us. Because we go about this every day like this is your dream. You are living your dream. And if your dream is just to make it, then you won't make it in how we go about it every day. You not only want to make it. Hey, coach, I want to be a top 50 ever first ballot Hall of Famer and get to my fourth contract. Okay, now let's talk about that. Now let's rewind from there on how – let's break it down. Let's live life backwards. Now, how long are you going to be able to play to get to your fourth contract? You're going to need to play 15 years. Do you know the percentage of guys that play 15 years? Let's start studying this, and now it'll give us a lens on how we're going to get there. But so many people, it's how many people want to be you now?
Well, I feel like if your goal is to make the NBA, anytime you have a goal like that, that has a finish line that is at such a young age or so early on, like you just check off that box once you get there. You're like, made the NBA.
And it's right. A wrap.
We're right. Done here. And yeah, you could probably get paid, you know, a ton of money, have a good couple years.
And then that's it. And then it's over.
But then what do you do after
that's
that?
That's exactly
what's
right.
What's your dream, coach?
I want to be famous in my home. I want to be my wife's best friend. I want to be the dad and husband that my boys look at and go, man, if I could do that every day, that'd be a great life. Mm-hmm. And I want my girls to grow up and go, I love that my dad treats my mom like that. And that's the kind of husband that I want to marry. And I know that the perception, PFT, of who I am and the reality of who I am, it's diametrically opposed. And I used to, similar to what we're talking about, I'm in my late 40s now. In my early 40s, I constantly fought that. I fought it internally. I fought it externally. And now as I approach my late 40s, I give no emotion to that. I give no energy to that. And I try to spend my emotion thinking about if I'm 49 and this is the last year of buzz number 4, that means buzz number 5 is about to begin. And so in my 49th year, I've done 4 things every single day to prepare for when I'm 50. And one of those things is I write my children every day they go to school. And I want to do that, and I'm doing it every single day that they go to school when I'm 49 as one of the 4 things I'm doing in preparation for buzz number 5. But here's the thing. When you get to 49, you look back at 40. You look back at 41. I probably met you guys when I was 43. I look back at when I was 43 when we did the first podcast, and I think about, I don't even remember what I said, but I know it was about, I was writing 425 coaches every day, every week. But the best version of yourself, you remember, was your first version. You weren't scared of anything. When somebody told you, when you were 8, and they say, hey, Big Cat, what are you going to do? Big Cat said, I'm going to be the starting quarterback for the Wisconsin Badgers. I'm going to be the starting quarterback for the Wisconsin Badgers. That's what somebody, when they asked him when he was 8. So you have no fear in your first version of yourself. And now as I'm going into my 5th version, instead of actually thinking about who I'm going to be buzz number 5, I'm really trying to think about, who does buzz number 6 want to be? Because if I can have enough wisdom to think about who Buzz number six wants to be, then I'll be even better in Buzz number five. And so when you ask me, what's my dream is when I get to Buzz six, and I hope and pray that I get to Buzz six, that means in Buzz five, probably all four of my kids, I hope, will have graduated high school, graduated college. Some of them are probably married. Some of them probably have had children. And that's, to me, that's Buzz number five. That's Buzz number six. And to me, that's what this all should be. And so if I'm famous in my own home, that probably means I'm doing okay outside my home.
Okay. Hypothetical, Buzz number five goes to how many Final Fours?
I don't know. I don't know, honestly, Big Cat, how much longer I'll coach.
Really?
Yeah, I don't.
Buzz number five is going to do something different?
I don't know.
You think Buzz six would regret what Buzz five did if he retired early?
That's what my wife says.
Yeah.
That's what my wife says. My wife says, talk about it and you act like it, but you wake up at four, where are you going to go?
That's a fair point. Yes. To be like, where are you physically going to be?
And so I've told her, we can build a gym. We can build a gym. I can build an office in the gym. We can have members like a normal health club. And then I can kind of run the health club and we can put the memorabilia around in my office. It'll be a place that I can go every day.
You're talking about building your own basketball team.
You just want to work at Planet Fitness.
Yeah, just like Planet Fitness. Yeah. Get a couple of good racks in there.
Buzz, we can let you do the lunk alarm or whatever it is.
She's like, that'll last 2 weeks. And then we'll have to move because you're going to want another job.
What you do is inside your Planet Fitness, you would put up two basketball hoops so that kids could play there when they came to work out.
Then you'd start watching them. Yeah.
And then you'd start putting them into teams.
Every Get Better gym we go to, Josh, you guys know Josh. Josh videos the entire gym, all of it. The office, the equipment, the layout, everywhere we go with our program when we go to a Get Better, he sends it to me. I save it. And then when I get home, I show it to Corey and go, when you build our gym, I want that right there. We need that in there. And she's like, sweetheart, this is like fairy tale land. I'm like, okay, well, just participate in the conversation.
One thing I'm trying to get better at since watching Ted Lasso did my brain a lot of good is trying to learn how to be curious and not judgmental, right?
Yeah.
So one thing I've always been judgmental about in the past is the yell leaders at A&M. That's a real tough one for me to get over. Yep. So I'm trying to be curious about them. What's their deal? What's going on there?
Yeah, obviously that's a tradition at A&M, and I probably should have a better education than I do. The one thing that I would say on the Yell Leaders this year, the leader of the Yell Leaders has gotten to know all of our players, and all of our players have gotten to know him. And there's four or five guys on our team that literally know all of the words and all of the signals for every yell. It's really cute and fun to watch our guys do it. And so the leader this year, Ross hired, I think, an absolute all-star to replace a legend earlier this week. Hired Joni Taylor as the head women's coach. I think you guys will be having multiple podcasts with her. She replaced Gary Blair. Gary Blair was a coach for 50 years. He's in the Hall of Fame, won a national championship. You guys know who I'm talking about. He actually came on the trip with us as a retired coach. The Yell leader was at the press conference, and I saw him, one of them, the leader. And he said, Coach, your team this season embodies the core values. There are seven of them at Texas A&M. And not only am I supposed to be there and it's part of what I do, but I appreciate and admire how you guys go about your team and representing our institution. It is unique to A&M. It's part of what makes A&M unique. But if you've never seen it or never heard it, obviously I was there as an assistant a long time ago, and so I am familiar with it. But I can understand curious versus judgmental.
Okay, so I had one last question for you. We're rooting hard for you on Tuesday night.
Thank you.
It's the Roback question. Use promo code TAKE, 20% off your first purchase at Roback, R-H-O-B-A-C-K.com. Use code TAKE for 20% off your first purchase. It's actually a two-part question, Roback question. One, can you give us a winner for the national title? Who do you think's playing the best ball?
Yeah, good question. I think Villanova losing their guy
more, yeah,
really changes their team. They probably will receive the least amount of hype with Moore being out. I just think that they're hard to get sped up. I think they do what they do. I have the utmost respect for Coach Wright. I think there's an incredible, obviously, once-in-a-lifetime storyline with Coach K, Duke, and what Hubert's been able to do in year one at North Carolina. So that will probably take over the week. But when we landed yesterday in New York, I was actually able to watch the only half of the NCAA tournament that I've watched. Familiar with Miami from our time in the ACC.
Yeah.
The way Kansas played in the second half yesterday, their talent is worthy of being in the Final Four. Their coach is a Hall of Famer. But what they were doing defensively just absolutely negated an incredible run by Miami.
Yeah.
So I would probably be against the grain, but I think within what I know, and I don't know a lot, I would say that Kansas is going to be right there.
I would say the same thing if you just watched the only half that you watched was that second half.
That's right.
And then my last question is something that drives me nuts about coaches – and I want your thoughts on it real quick. I hate, and this is more because of the foul rules in college. I hate when coaches sit a guy with two fouls for too long.
Yeah.
How do you go about deciding it? Because it always like baffles me that, yeah, you don't want to lose him at the end of the game, but you're also going to lose the game in the first half because you sat your best player for 10 minutes.
Yeah, I agree. So a couple of things, and I'll be succinct in how I answer it. I've always kind of felt that way, and then because it has been me that's had to make that decision, I kind of understand why most coaches do it. So we have a really, really intelligent staff. And one of them, I think, is a basketball savant. And so I tell TJ exactly what you just told me. And I go, hey, TJ, I need you to help me have some data on how to better understand this so I'm not doing it just because my instinct says protect him. So what we did was time, score, and momentum of the game dictates it. Hey, if you're about to lose the game in the first half, you got to play the guy. Mm-hmm. Everybody kind of knows that. But if it's a game and he's got two fouls, what data can we have that suggests if we play PFT, he's going to get his third. But if we play Kate, she's not going to foul.
Right.
And so there is data that we studied on our team, and we update it every third game. This is how often he fouls, whoever he is. So, okay, PFT fouls every 8 minutes. PFT just picked up his second foul. Okay, there's 5 minutes left. Do we need to play PFT? We can, because Buzz, he only fouls once every 8 minutes.
Right.
So our decision now, when that happens, is based on what the data says up until that moment in time in PFT's playing career for us.
Okay.
That makes sense. Your data's way off, though. I fouled out one time in 2.5 minutes. Quickest foul out in the history of my youth.
Yeah, that was pretty fast.
Yeah, that was extremely fast.
Maybe we want to hurry up and get you fouled out so we don't have to play you.
That was kind of my strategy.
That way your AAU coach and your mom, when they call me and go, hey, why is he not playing? Well, we tried to play him. He just fouls out every 2.5 minutes.
I was taking the choice out of the coach's hands. I was voluntarily benching myself. Two of those calls were bullshit, though. Everybody knows that. Well, thanks for coming on, Coach. We really appreciate it.
I'm grateful for the opportunity. It's great to see you guys.
And we're gonna make sure to respect A&M next year in our Jake Pom ratings.
Yeah.
That data is formulated heavily.
I hope we're going in the right direction. I think we have some momentum and we have some traction. We need to add a little bit to our roster, but I like what I anticipate will return.
I love it. Very cool. And we look forward to our thank you note, which I'm sure is coming.
On the way. And I think is the address. I saw it on the
I'll make sure you have it. Well, that's why we hired security guards, because people just always show up out front.
I got you.
All right. Thanks,
thank you,
Coach.
Guys.
Buzz Williams was brought to you by Visible. Great friends over at Visible. If you've got a cell phone, if you're looking to get your own line and you're looking to get a great deal on it, but also have the service that you've come to be dependent on, there's one option that you have, and that's Visible. You can switch to Visible. It's wireless where you get family plan savings, but you don't need the family. It's that easy. With Visible, you get a single line, unlimited data, talk, text, and hotspot for as low as $25 a month. 5G is included, so that's all that you need. It's everything you need from your phone, and it's super, super affordable at $25 a month. Tell me another wireless carrier doing this right now. You can't do it. Bigger carriers have single line plans that cost double what you would pay for a single line plan at Visible. With those other carriers, you'd have to make some serious long-term life-changing commitments, like marrying your best friend just to get a deal. But with Visible, you save from the start. No family or awkward personal commitments needed. Avoid marrying your friend. Just switch to Visible. For data management practices, learn more at Visible.com. Additional terms apply. And now, here's Trent Brown.
And now for something completely different.
Okay, we now welcome on a very special guest. I was thinking about it, one of the largest guests we've ever had. I think it's you and Kane, the wrestler. It is offensive lineman Trent Brown, fresh off signing a new 2-year contract with the Patriots. So congratulations right off the bat.
Thank you.
That's got to feel awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to have you in here. I don't know. Are you familiar with our show at all?
A little bit here and there.
So we want to talk about everything in football, but a lot of times what we'll do is we'll just like get right to the chase on one question that's like stuck in our head.
Okay.
The tattoo. We just got to do it. Let's just do it right away. Let's just get it out of the way. It's probably the greatest tattoo of all time. Can you walk us through the tattoo?
I got this tattoo when I was like right after my rookie year in the league. And I just told my tattoo artist Al in Atlanta. I was like, I told him a couple things that I wanted, and then I told him he could have full artistic freedom after that. And that's where he took it.
So when you said full artistic freedom, tell, like how much direction did you give him? Were you like, I want one titty on there? Or?
Yeah.
So like, I didn't even have any women in it. But then after he drew, of course, you know, they do the stencil and all that stuff. I'm like, shit, fuck it, let's go with it.
It's the funniest tattoo. Whenever I see it, I like laugh because it's like, listen, it's your body and you made a tattoo that's like, hey, I'm the man, look at this.
Right.
And it's great. Yeah. So
what was your family's reaction?
Nobody really cares. My girl hated though.
Oh well, I would. Why? Well, yeah. That's crazy by her.
What part do you think she doesn't like?
Yeah.
Of course, the ass. You know, it's crazy that it's really like two girls like bowing down to me, basically.
Yeah. So for people who are listening and don't, I think everyone probably knows it because we've talked about it a good amount. But it's Trent Brown, standing there with two girls. One of them's wearing your jersey, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of them's wearing your jersey. They're having a great time, the three of them together.
But I mean, it's not just, you know what I mean, like a bullshit tattoo. It's some significance to it. You know what I mean? I'm a 7-round draft pick. That's why I call myself the greatest underdog. I'm 7-round draft pick. Here I am in going into year 8, and I've kind of proven myself to be one of the best offensive tackles in the game.
Yeah.
I think if you play for the Patriots, you go somewhere else, and then you come back to the Patriots, to me, that tells you everything that you need to know. Where it's like, okay, if Bill Belichick and Ernie Adams or whoever's calling the shots are bringing this guy back, then he can play some fucking football.
Yeah, and you know, smart people would look at it that way. Some would look at it in other ways.
You still have a chip on your shoulder for falling to the 7th round? Like, is there a small part of you in the background you're like, man, the Patriots fucked up too for passing on me?
Yeah, they did. I mean, I remember, it's, you know, long snappers, all type of positions being picked before me, and I was just like, just added to the fuel to the fire.
Yeah. Well, so what was your path? Like you said, a great underdog story. Well, let's start here. When did you realize that you were like a mammoth of a man? Because you're what, 6'8", 6'9"?
6'9", 370.
370.
Yeah.
At what point in your like childhood were you like, oh, okay, I'm not like all these other little kids.
Yeah, always, really. I've always towered over everybody pretty much.
Yeah.
In every class, every group, whatever it was. And then...
Like, how tall were you in, like, when you were 12?
I was probably, like, 5'11", 6 foot.
Jesus Christ.
So you're bigger than your teachers when you were, like, 6th grade.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I remember for 5th grade graduation, you know, you got to get measured for cap and gown and stuff, so... I was 5'9".
Wow.
Jesus Christ.
I'm 5'9" right now. I'm 37 years old.
What was the underdog story that you obviously went to a couple different schools, learning the position. Was there a moment where it's like, okay, I think I've actually finally like harnessed all this power and this size and everything? Because that had to be part of it, that like you're growing so rapidly to figure out how to use your strength.
It was always, you know, those little awkward moments where it's like, dang, did I have a growth spurt last night? But I think I always believed in myself and my ability, but the true light turning moment for me was when I was after my first year in the league and I had gotten a couple starts under my belt. I think I started like the last 6 games for the 49ers, but I had come in like right before the first half was over against the Bengals, and they were pretty loaded. They had Carlos Dunlap. I mean, him alone as a rookie to block him and hold my own.
Right.
I felt like I did pretty good. And then pretty much just went against everybody that they had up. It seemed like they was just trying to chop me out, you know. And I held it down. So,
yeah.
It went from there.
You've gotten a lot of high praise from Von Miller in particular over the years. It almost seems like he goes out of his way sometimes to be like, I hope somebody asks me a question about who my favorite tackle in the league to play against is, because I've got Trent Brown ready. I've got 5 nice things to say about him. I think I've seen like 3 different interviews where he's brought you up. Now is he following you? Does he have a crush on you? Is that why he's going to the Bills? He wants to play you twice a year?
No, I don't think that's what it is. I think he's real recognized real. He kind of maybe has a little understanding of my history, my background, where I come from. And, you know what I mean, he's just showing love where it's due, giving credit where it's due.
He might also just be buttering you up. Just so that, like, trying to make you read all
the rat poison,
Coach Saban would say.
I know he's not buttering me up, because every time I see him, it's definitely a job.
Yeah.
Who's the strongest player that you have to block?
Strongest?
Yeah. Like, most physical. Because there's some speed rushers out there that can get around you. But
so I wouldn't – the strongest player I've blocked in my career, I would have to say, was Cameron Wake. But I wouldn't say anybody just stands out from a strength standpoint.
It's probably tough to move you.
Yeah.
Like, there's probably not too many defensive players that can just, like, out-muscle you.
Mm-hmm.
What does it feel like when you are run-blocking and you just know there's nothing that anyone can do to stop it? Is it, like, the greatest feeling in the world?
I mean, that's kind of part of why I love the game.
Right.
Honestly, just being able to move grown men against their will.
Yeah, because every time we talk to an offensive lineman, they're like, you know, pass blocking is part of the job, but it's when you run block. And I love that element where, like, if you can't pass block the whole, like, I'm actually thinking about the game in Buffalo, right?
Yeah.
Like, we were at that game. Was that one of your favorite games? Because you just basically, what, you had 3 passes thrown?
Yeah, I think it was 3 passes the whole game. I mean, but I think that's when you could do that, that's great. But I mean, of course you want to always have a balanced attack, but when the weather doesn't allow you to and you have to do what you got to do, it's just you got to do what you got to do to win.
Yeah.
Before that game started, we were outdoors. Well, the window to our suite was open in Buffalo, so we were feeling the elements too.
Cold as shit.
It was very cold, and the wind was just, I don't think I've ever seen football played in wind like that before. It was crazy. When you're getting ready for the game, what's the thought process to determine whether or not you're going to wear sleeves?
So, as an offensive lineman, I pretty much know, like, no matter the conditions, I'm never wearing sleeves.
Or you just convince yourself that you're not cold, that being cold doesn't hurt.
It's mental.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah?
It's mental. So, when you see, like, a defensive line, that's all, they've got the long sleeves on, they're all decked out, they've got the Sub-Zero masks and all that. Are you already, like, when you step on the field, like, I've got a mental edge on these guys because they can't convince themselves that it's not cold?
Somewhat. I just, for me personally, I think when you wear sleeves, especially loose sleeves, they the sleeves catch the breeze and hold it in. So if it just hits skin and just kind of bounces off.
We were actually talking to Julian Edelman a few weeks ago, and he was telling us about the little things that Coach Belichick likes to coach people up on. For example, like, he hated it when Edelman would wear red gloves as a receiver because the refs could see him grabbing hold, and it would make it easier to call holds against him if he was wearing these highlighted gloves. Are there any like small things that he tells you that you had to change up about your game when you played in New England?
Nah. That's one of the things I love most about New England. They always pretty much let me be me. They let me play my game as long as it's within the system.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything goes.
What about we've heard many times that Dante Scarnecchia was like one of the best offensive line coach of all time.
The best.
The best. So the what best. Was what like that's a fascinating thing to me, because you'd think that there are like offensive line has been happening for so long that how could any one coach get an edge over all the other coaches? But it feels like he had that edge where he coached it better than everyone else.
I think it was just the attention to detail, the love he had for the game, and the love he has for the guys in his room.
Yeah.
And I think the things he's willing to do for the guys in his room as far as taking up for you, say in a staff meeting or something where other coaches would just let whoever berate you and everybody else in the room. You know what I mean? He's not one of those guys that's going for it.
Right.
If anybody's going to talk shit about his players and the guys in his room, it's going to be him. And then he's going to level up on you after.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I think that's the best kind of coaching it is, the tough love kind of coaching.
But has your back.
Yeah, but has your back.
What's something that he showed you, like, detail-wise that unlocked, you know, your abilities? Was there one specific thing where he's like, hey, do this, or, like, your hand placement, or how you use your hips, or anything like that, where it's like, man.
So for me, I've always been athletically gifted, physically, too, for that matter. But when I first got there, it was just the drill work. All his drill works translates over to the game. And then you do it so much and repetitively, and it's just second nature. And then I remember it was Jacksonville, my first time I was with the Patriots. And he just cursed my ass out on the sideline one time. And then that wasn't a good game for me because I was still kind of really trying to grow into a left tackle at that point. And then the next week at practice, he cursed me out again. And, I mean, some people would get down about it, but I was just like, challenge accepted. And so from that point on, that's probably the best football I ever played.
Yeah.
And then we just kind of grew to love each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People have been talking for the last, like, I don't know, 9 months about how Mac Jones at times didn't seem like a rookie in terms of how he was, like, commanding the huddle, whatever case may be, like locker room presence. Has he gotten to a point where he's allowed to yell at you guys, or is it still like if Mac's yelling at me, we're gonna have words?
Nah, hell no. Nah. Ain't nobody doing that. Cause I mean, if you fuck up, you fuck up. You gotta be a man and take it on the chin. You know what I mean? That's what it's all about. You can't be out here being sensitive.
Yeah. I used to always see like Tom Brady, like he was not afraid to go up to anybody and start. I'm just curious what that runway is like for a rookie.
I think If you're the quarterback of the team, you're the leader of the locker room for sure. You know what I mean? And no matter what your age may say, but you got to handle business accordingly.
Yeah.
As well as everybody else.
Is it weird having a leader whose name is McCorkle?
Nah, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. There you go. Breaking news.
McCorkle Jones.
Mac 10, that's what I call him.
Mac 10. That's a great nickname, actually.
Yeah. What about, so speaking of Tom Brady, obviously you blocked for him. Was there any moment where, like, in the huddle or whatever, where you had Tom Brady at his, like, pure, holy shit, this is Tom Brady, like, we're good because he's Tom Brady?
I ain't gonna lie to you. Like, I think that whole season I looked across the huddle and was like, fuck, this Tom. But I think that's as an offensive lineman, that's just extra motivation to do your job, because nobody wants to be the guy to, you know what I mean, give up that sack that sends him home.
Right. Right, especially that Chiefs AFC Championship game, right, where you guys, you know, win
everything
in overtime.
On the line. Yeah.
Yeah, and the was that on your side, D Ford?
Yeah,
that was.
Mm-hmm. Did you know it was offside?
I didn't know it was offside.
Wow, so you thought season's over?
I did, but damn. I was, that playoff, that whole year was fun for me. You know what I mean? I'm not going to lie to you. That was probably the most fun I had playing football since I've been in the NFL.
Yeah.
That was my first time really experiencing some winning football since junior college. My first 3 years were with San Fran. It wasn't great. And then I got there, kind of took off, and won the freaking Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, was your coach? Did you have Jim Tomsula as a coach?
Yeah, Jimmy T, then I went Chip Kelly, then I went Shanahan.
So what was Jim Tomsula like?
A ball of fire. I mean, of course, he loves his D-line, but I think he's a guy that loves his players too. It's just, I think you gotta adapt to different people. You gotta, adapt, improvise, overcome, as my college coach would say. Everybody not going to be the same. Everybody not going to coach you the same, but you just gotta take the meat and leave the bone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
I know when he used to drink beer, he used to just crack open the top of like a light beer and then just dump hot sauce into it. And that was his cocktail that he would make for himself.
That's a hell of a Bloody Mary.
Yeah, I know. No, he's a crazy guy. I want to talk about something like kind of serious that happened to you, because I remember before that one game, you were getting like an IV
in Cleveland, yeah.
In Cleveland, and they put air into your body, right?
Yeah.
They were like a little bit sketchy with the details that they shared on television, obviously. But when I saw that, I was like concerned, because that could be a big deal.
Yeah.
Like at the time, were you actually like worried about your safety?
So basically, I'll tell you the full story. Basically, I was fresh off of COVID. I had caught COVID for the second time, and then it's 2 week quarantine period. So on the Monday of that my second week of quarantine, GM hit my agent and told him we fully expect Trent to play this week. You know what I mean? I wasn't thinking anything of it. You know what I mean? I'm thinking like, I'm cool with that. That was my plans anyway. So I start getting tested like Wednesday or Thursday. They running all these tests on me for COVID, blood work, cardiovascular, all this stuff. I pass them. And then I practice Friday. We get on a flight Friday to go to Cleveland. Then Saturday, walk through, everything was fine. Sunday, I get two bags before every game, IVs. And that shit just got air. I got air in my veins, and then they tried to blame it on COVID. But I had just gotten, cleared from all COVID protocols and everything. So how could you blame it on COVID?
Right.
So it was just a whole bunch of bullshit. And then after the season, everybody wanted to try to blame it on me and make it seem like it's my fault I'm missing all this time.
They let you stick the needles in your arm? Why would that be your fault,
right,
at all?
They almost killed me. Basically weren't paying attention.
Was that a concern? Like, were you afraid that you might die from that?
I was scared as hell. I was laid out on the floor. Like, basically, I was just sitting there. They pull out the syringe or whatever, and then I pass out. I couldn't feel my limbs. I'm shaking. I'm sweating.
Jesus.
Like, you know what I mean? So that shit was scary. Yeah. And then, you say it's my fault. You want to talk all this shit about me, but then I still come back and play when I didn't have to. I could have sat out the rest of the year. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's crazy. Damn. So I had one last question for you, Trent. This has been awesome. It's the rowback question. I don't know. What size are you? Shirt.
Four X.
Okay, respect. That's legit. I hope we have a 4X for you, because you can use promo code TAKE. You get 20% off your first purchase. They make the best performance Q-zips and hoodies, rhoback.com. Use code TAKE for 20% off your first purchase. So, you played with Chris Long, right? No.
Against him.
I'm trying to think. I think it was Chris who told me that you are the biggest man he's ever seen. When you're in the locker room and, like, I would imagine there's some roughhousing or, like, busting balls, does anyone ever try you?
Nah, I don't participate in that type of stuff.
That's the luxury,
is that other people don't let you participate because they're like, we don't want Trent Brown to, like, squash us?
Nah, nobody, that may happen every blue moon in some places, but I haven't been many places where that's been a thing.
Okay.
I mean, you may joke and shoot the shit like that, but nothing really physical.
Right.
It's big man privilege.
Yes.
You know, like you're walking around, you're like, it's crazy. Nobody ever fucks with you. It's weird. Life is pretty good. I'm like getting chased down by like anyone above a buck.
I
mean,
I might get fucked with by a receiver or something every now and then, but it's just bullshit. Funny game.
I think it might have been Jules who said it. He was like, Trent Brown is the craziest like athlete I've ever seen in my life, like terms of size and speed and strength. It's not fair.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I've always been athletically gifted.
When was the last time you were in a room with somebody that was bigger than you?
Probably like 2 years ago, my first encounter with Shaq.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Shaq would be a good answer. Mm-hmm. That would be a good answer.
But that was even like a surprise to me because it was like, dang, he's not that much taller than me. That's when I really knew that, dang,
yeah.
He really might be a giant.
Like you could body him up. Yeah.
That picture of The Rock and Charles Barkley and Shaq, have you seen that one?
Mm-mm.
It makes you just realize how small The Rock is compared to a guy like Shaq.
Yeah.
You think of The Rock as being like He-Man,
mm-hmm.
and then Shaq's like a foot and a half taller. That's crazy.
Yeah, Shaq is huge.
Yeah, yeah. Like, So you re-signed. Congratulations again. It's got to feel great. Best of luck this upcoming season. Maybe a little addition to the tattoo. I don't know. Have you thought about that? Adding another girl?
I'll keep you guys posted.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Because, I mean, that tattoo.
I think, yeah. How about this? There's been some talk about reaching out for a certain wide receiver in the NFC West, Blaze up in Seattle. Very fast guy, big guy also.
Mm.
If you were to bring him over, then you should get a third girl added to that tattoo in his honor.
Yes.
It's kind of like his thing. He'll appreciate it.
I think that's very doable.
Okay.
If it goes down,
yeah.
Will you do it?
I'll add a third girl.
Okay. There we go. Beautiful. Trent, thank you so much, and congrats again on the contract.
Thanks for having me.
Trent Brown was brought to you by Mountain Dew. This March, Mountain Dew signed a new roster of athletes, ballers with personalities as bold as their flavors, and the ability to ignite a stadium full of fans in an instant. The unsung heroes of the Mountain Dew Spark Squad were given a special mission this March. If they score in a game where their team wins, Mountain Dew would dump a truckload of free Mountain Dew on campus for Hoops fans to enjoy. The Mountain Dew Spark Squad features fan favorite players Carter Booth of Iowa State, Avery Hughes of Arkansas, and Andrea Catramatos of Baylor. Unfortunately, despite some heroic efforts, our Spark Squad member teams have been eliminated from competition this March. Even though our players didn't score during a team win, Mountain Dew still wants to honor these awesome athletes. So Baylor, Iowa State, and Arkansas, be on the lookout for Mountain Dew on your campus in the coming weeks. Huge news, if you go to school at Baylor, Iowa State, or Arkansas, there's going to be a truckload of free Mountain Dew that gets dropped off on campus. Be on the lookout for Mountain Dew on your campus in these coming weeks.
Okay, let's wrap it up with some guys on chicks. And can I just do a quick confession? I reread all the stories about Coach K and Dylan Brooks this morning just to get my hate up even more. It's hate week.
You have a fetish.
And he lied to the world, and then the audio came out, and he just was insane story. But yes, I have a fetish. That's fine.
Why do I like flowers?
That's actually a great question.
That's a wonderful question, yeah. They smell nice.
They look nice.
I think you might not like flowers as much as you like the gesture of, like, once in a while, a guy taking time out of his day to think about you. And so that's I think women just like being like, oh, he's thoughtful. He thought to stop at a bodega for 30 seconds and pick up a bouquet and drop them off for me. That's nice.
That Big Cat mentioned that the other day, the like clearly obviously picked up down the street flowers. Like sometimes they can be a hindrance.
Yeah, no, those are bad. When you come home with the flowers, they're like, oh, so there was a guy sitting at your Subway stop with flowers. When it's like one sad rose in like a crinkled up plastic. That you should avoid that. But yeah, I think they smell nice and they look nice.
There's also, he definitely fucked up flowers.
Yeah.
Which
those are the bigger ones.
You can also smell those out. Those are also at the bodega. They're wrapped up, but maybe they're a little bit bigger than the Subway rose.
Yes. It's just like, I'm going to get all the flowers.
Yeah, you bring those home and then she's like, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
However, explain.
Mm-hmm.
What are your guys' favorite flowers?
It's a great question. I like a Lantana. They smell nice. Mint family.
I don't know what roses.
I like orchids.
Sure. Tulips.
Sunflowers.
Tulips.
Da Vinci.
Historically, flowers were given to be used as an ideal fragrance for women. So that's why the men would bring the flowers and the women would make it into fragrances.
Hmm.
That was nice. The historical fact.
Nice.
Yeah, orchids are nice to look at.
My boyfriend is obsessed with the Arizona Coyotes.
Uh-oh.
He watches every game and has almost too much Coyotes gear. He does this weird thing where he watches their highlights literally every day from when they were good 1 year and made a deep playoff run, in parentheses. Another thing he likes to do is randomly blurt out the phrase, "All right, Coyotes fans, get on your feet and welcome to your to the ice, your Arizona Coyotes," and then howls. From my understanding, they are one of the worst hockey teams ever, and this obsession with living in the past is getting weird. The random announcements of the team coming on the ice and howling in public is very embarrassing. What do I do? Please help.
I think maybe you just ask him if he could save all that for when he's on the podcast with Ryan Whitney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is Biz. Biz's girlfriend, right?
It must be.
Yeah. Or the mascot? Is he the mascot?
Wiley?
He sounds like he's the mascot. This is, that's a tough one. Like, a lot of franchises, you could be like, well, you know, that's a cool passion. Like, the Coyotes. Whew.
Playing at Arizona State next year.
Yeah, hopefully you live in Arizona so the weather's nice. I'm grasping. I don't really know. Like, there are certain teams where you got to just be like, you know what? I'm not going to do this. Like, this is too much time.
Mm-hmm. That's me and the Wizards.
Yeah, Billy.
Roadrunner lingerie might get it going.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. Do they make that?
No bad ideas.
I don't know.
Yeah. They should.
Meme.
Yeah.
All right. This girl, for whatever reason, put a star in the E in sex.
Well, I like
only
that.
Half the times, though.
okay.
So one time during SX with a star, I really had to fart while in missionary, so I clenched as best I could to prevent it. Successfully, I did, but after sex, regularly spelled.
Oh, no. I don't want this question.
No, I was with you, but it's not
okay,
that bad.
Okay, all right.
Successfully, I did. But after sex, my boyfriend told me how he liked how I clenched my vagina to make it tighter for him. So as this continues to happen, he will tell me it hurts because I clenched too hard or not. Is this a common situation during SX, back again with the star?
So she's farting and clenching. She's got to eat more beans?
It's a very dangerous line.
Sounds like she unlocked
she needs to just eat beans before sex. So then it's great for him.
Until she farts.
Yeah.
But I think if you actually explain that to him, he'd be like, okay, I get it. Yeah. No, if you fart, no big deal. Just clench.
Yeah. And he'd also be like, well, yeah, I thought that was going a different way. And I'm still thinking about that, so I'm kind of shook. Let's just go to the next question.
What's up, fellas? I'm pregnant. My husband and I are big football fans and have always dreamed of sharing our football Sundays with our son or daughter with the hopes that they enjoy it just as much as we do. The problem is that I feel like a bad parent already because I'm a Lions fan and he's a Browns fan. Should we knowingly lead them into this life of inevitable loss and heartbreak or just encourage them toward a totally different franchise? Thanks.
Mm. That's a good question because I think you put it correctly. Like you're leading your child into pain and your instincts as a parent is to protect them. However, I think that a healthy amount of adversity and losing growing up actually has a good impact on the kid for learning how to deal with all that. Whereas if you just made them say like a Patriots fan who also rooted for Duke, then they'd turn out to be a real piece of shit.
Why are you laughing so hard, Jake?
I think you got to have multiple children and then just figure out like who's the bigger loser. And I think that would be the Lions. Yeah, no. That would be the Lions.
I don't know.
Not this year.
No, but in general, like franchise-wise, I think the Lions are the bigger loser.
Well, also, Hard Knocks is back. We should mention that, too.
Right, but then you pick like the loser of the two kids, and you make that the Lions fan.
What if, I mean, do you really want your son growing up in a world where he roots for Deshaun Watson?
Well, by the time he gets old enough to remember, Deshaun Watson, I'm sure, will be out of the league for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's maybe you can have them root for different teams, like the two of them that are rivals.
Or just root for, actually, you know what? Root for both. That really is not, I think Lion, if someone was like, I have two teams, normally people would be like, ew, gross. But if they're like, yeah, my two teams are the Lions and the Browns, they'd be like, why would you do that to yourself?
That's like, actually valid.
Yeah, like you could totally, I think that might be the only combination you can pull off. Be like, yeah, I'm a Lions and a Browns fan.
Wouldn't it be awesome chaos, though, if you had two kids and as they were growing up, you like, let's just say that they're twins and you have them become one a diehard fan of like the Red Sox and the other a diehard fan of the Yankees.
Yeah.
And just create ultimate chaos and entertainment for yourself in your own home.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Have them just brawl every day.
All right, we'll end with this one. Hey, boys, especially Jake and PFT. Quick question. Do all boys not flush their pee before they get in the shower, or is it just my husband? Thanks, and wait, fuck Coach
what?
K.
Hold on. One, why was it just for Jake and PFT? That's so...
It's weird.
And two, all boys pee in the shower.
My chopped liver?
No, I'm saying...
it is an unusual combo.
No, I thought it was going to be like something that linked you. Like, I was going to be like a nasal spray question. But that question has no link.
Glasses question.
I don't think anyone's ever asked Jake and I to take him to the Devil's get together.
Yeah, that would be an interesting visual.
Yeah, Jake, which side do you want? Front or back?
I don't know.
Oh, come on!
You gotta go back.
Yeah, I think you're a back guy.
You're a back guy for sure.
Yeah, guys, just pee in the shower. What are we talking about?
Yeah, not so he pees in the toilet. And then he doesn't flush the toilet, gets in the shower. I will admit that sometimes...
I used to be superstitious that the water would get in your shower water. I'm just going to admit that.
I don't think that's superstitious.
It's not.
I think that's just stupid.
A fact.
Yeah.
So
how do you know?
But the superstitious, that would be like a luck thing. Like today's the day that it's going to happen.
I know you were fucking Dan the Plumber, like...
What, you think that your toilet water comes out your faucet?
It's the same
when
room.
When you flush it, so...
You don't know where that tube is going?
If you take a shit, your poop comes out of the tub?
What about, do you not drink out of the sink?
Not right after I flush the toilet.
I think it's normal for some people, especially of an older generation, to say, don't flush the toilet before you get in the shower because it'll turn all the water hot.
Right.
That's before modern plumbing system. So if you live in an older house...
Yeah.
It sometimes works like that, but I kind of like Hank's take, though, the more I think about it.
Yeah,
like,
if you pee, it will go, and then you flush it, and then you immediately turn on the shower, you're just bathing in your own pee.
Yep.
That's exactly how it works. But yeah, what guy doesn't fucking pee in the shower? I don't trust people who don't pee in the shower. That's the most natural thing in the world.
Mm-hmm. Jake, even if I just peed, I get in the shower and I pee.
Yeah.
It like pulls it out of you.
I'll sometimes not even take a shower. I'll just stand at the edge of the shower and pee in the shower hole.
I actually do that when I'm drunk.
Yeah.
Because it takes less aiming. Because
it has a bathroom phobia, too.
What are you talking about?
A toilet phobia.
Why?
Sinks, showers.
No. That's not a phobia.
Any hole,
that means
any hole but a
toilet.
A hole's
a hole. A hole's a hole. I'll take any hole. What about you, Jake? Take any hole?
No, he's a mouth guy. We established
that. This guy, Jake, who's just, he's a fucking savage from the back and goes and fucks any mouth he can find. He's credentialed for the Final Four. This is crazy. What are you going to say, Billy?
Peeing on your feet prevents athlete's foot.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Okay.
I actually think...
I was good. Whatever. Yeah,
I've heard that enough where I think that there might be some truth to it.
Yeah.
Also, jellyfish stings.
Yeah. That's
if
fine.
You get stung by a jellyfish, take a leak on it.
And you don't have to wear batting gloves if you pee on your hands.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Moises Alou.
Yeah. Peeing in your butthole means that you won't get an itchy asshole. So try that, Billy.
Never tried it.
You should try it.
Maybe I will.
You're flexible enough. All right,
lie on the ground and then
you pee,
blast
you pee
it up and turn
up
around.
And then you quickly sit farther back.
You have to do a crunch.
Yeah,
right after you're done peeing.
Yeah, it's just like a fountain into your asshole.
What if you just
what a funny visual, just peeing in your own butt.
What if you just take it and you like stretch it between the legs?
Yeah,
and
you could
pee
yeah.
directly into it.
Yeah, just plug the hole.
Yeah,
you fuck yourself.
Far, yeah.
I wouldn't even get. I wouldn't get halfway around the equator.
Wait, if you pee directly into your own butt, would you eventually pee that pee out again?
No, or you'd puke it out.
Come out the shower.
I think you'd poop out your pee.
No, you'd puke out your pee.
No, I think you'd
from your butt.
No,
yeah.
You'd poop it like a bird.
No, it goes up. It's the elevator. It just keeps going up.
So you barf
like
your
the
own
shower
pee.
System.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Got
all
it.
The plumbing.
Got it.
All right, numbers.
Six.
We really cleaned that one up. 22.
Am I banned?
No. Okay. Why are we banned?
I don't know. 39. I messed up today.
Oh, no.
25.
39.
76.
8.
Fuck!
Damn. Whoa, what did you guess?
6. I saw it. I saw a single number. I saw like,
oh, because you're doing the Coach K 6?
I've also never
won. You got
won.
A fetish. You have a fetish.
I've never won.
You've got a fetish. You've got a fetish.
Newborn horses who's
how many
look
like how many fucking times have it's pissing me off now.
You've never won?
No.
How
wow.
do I Google it? Everyone else has won?
Yeah.
How many times has everyone else won, Jake?
I don't have that.
I think
okay.
I've won
no,
like
won
2 or 3.
Times.
I think 2 or 3 for me yeah. too.
Honestly,
Bubba once. Hank, you have 0?
Hector.
I would, yeah, if you're in Hank's shoes, wins. I would trade all my team's championships to
just win
one of
one.
These. That's actually more important.
You want to make that deal right now? I'll do it again.
Yeah, would you rather do,
I'll do it
this
again.
Week or get the new number?
What do you mean?
If you, you can get the next number.
No, mental warfare.
What are you talking about? No, I'm going to hit it again. You're going to be right, and then none of your team's going to win again, but you'll get that.
6.
Does this count or no?
Yeah, this counts.
Just for Hank.
I mean, there's no shot.
Hank versus the machine.
There's no shot.
What if he got it?
There's no fucking shot.
Oh, my God.
I got, 76.
That's what I guessed last time.
Oh, really? You always get 69.
I know. I actually
God damn
it, changed
six
it for
had
the
been
first
right,
time.
It would just been the curse of Henry Locke.
Wait, does that
the greatest moment in the history
of the game.
Does
that count for me?
No, you didn't what? Guess
no.
it.
I guessed 76.
Yeah, but this is Hank's. It was Hank's
moment.
Yeah, yeah. It was Hank's to curse his own teams, which, for the record, he just said he basically wants to win this more than he wants his teams mm-hmm. to win.
When we're putting this in the record
I'm a prisoner of the moment.
When that popped up, the glare blocked out the 7. I saw just a 6. My heart stopped for a second.
It would have been
witchcraft.
Hank would never have won anything ever again in his life. It would have been incredible, and it would all be because of him.
Yep.
He tried to make a deal with the devil. Oh,
love you guys.
Real
more?
Shame.
No. We do this all day. Talking away. Though I don't know what I'm to say, I'll say it anyway. Today. Shying away. Oh, I'll be coming for your love, okay? Take on me. Needless to say, I'm on sentence, but I'm being stolen away.
Gone.